tickets, please. Once in a blue moon, does it think of happiness? It happens when you're in.
Thanks for last picks. Became suspect and bending low as if to hear. Well, in the armies who ceased advancing because the people held their ear. Well, in the shepherds and the soldiers, well, they laid beneath the stars, exchanging visions and laying arms. Shining valleys, oh, where the pure air recognized, and my senses newly opened, 'cause I awakened into the cry. People have the power. People have the power.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner. The U.S. Justice Department announced yesterday that German computer memory manufacturing giant Infineon Technologies AG has agreed to plead guilty to international price fixing. The company conspired with other dynamic random access memory manufacturers to cheat Dell, Compaq, Hewlett-Packard, and others. The company will be required to pay a $160 million fine, the third largest price fixing penalty in U.S. history.
United Food and Commercial Workers Union locals in California have begun shopping for allies in Colorado and Ohio. Contracts covering more than 60,000 supermarket employees in San Francisco, parts of Colorado, and Cincinnati all expired on September 11th. UFCW locals from those three areas have begun negotiations toward an alliance. According to representatives of the UFCW, the massive unification is an attempt to give support to one another if contract negotiations turn into a fight. The alliance comes nearly a year after the nation's longest ever grocery strike and lockout in Southern California.
Contrary to the current trend, J.P. Morgan announced this week that it will rehire 4,000 outsourced IT workers. Just 2 years ago, J.P. Morgan agreed to a $5 billion outsourcing deal with IBM, at the time one of the largest in the U.S. A company spokesperson said the employees are being rehired due to a recent merger with Bank One, which he said strengthened J.P. Morgan's technology infrastructure.
On Wednesday morning, after a night-long occupation of a Canadian paper plant that closed unexpectedly, disheartened workers returned to their homes. 400 workers were out of a job when the New Brunswick pulp and paper plant announced it was suddenly closing Tuesday. The plant, owned by Parsons and Whitmore of New York, said the closing was due to the high cost of wood and rising Canadian dollar. Union representatives at the mill are encouraging the workers to contact local officials who they blame for allowing the company to leave New Brunswick too easily.
Today's Dow Bob Report. Working women spend twice as much time as working men taking care of children and doing housework, according to a recent survey by the U.S. Labor Department. 78% of women and 85% of men hold jobs, but only 19% of men reported doing housework daily, compared to two-thirds of working women. Women also spent an hour and a half caring for a family member. The average man spent only 50 minutes. You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
No, not the yacht.
Darling, wake up. You're having a nightmare.
Oh, it was terrible. Oh. I dreamed we lost our billions, and we were middle class.
There.
We were both working, and we could barely pay our bills. The children had to go to public schools. Oh. We had something called an HMO.
Oh, you poor thing.
It seems so real. We couldn't even afford my Botox.
Oh, sweetheart, go back to sleep. I'll write another campaign check tomorrow.
President George W. Bush, keeping alive the American dream for some of us.
Easily paid for by billionairesforbush.com. Corporate advertising is everywhere. I don't mean on radio, TV, billboards, and other commercial spaces. I also don't merely mean that it's in our public schools, yammering at us in elevators, catching us by surprise in our parks and museums, and otherwise intruding into our community spaces. I mean, it's everywhere. I know, you're thinking, Hightower, there you go again with the gross exaggeration. But I'm not exaggerating. You want gross? Meet the latest advertising advance, Whizmark. That's whiz as in take a whiz. Yes, we're talking about male urination and the advertising potential therein. Perhaps you think that I'm going to go on a tear about the little TV screens that many places are now putting above the urinals so you can watch an ad as you, well, whiz. But no, that would be almost civilized. I'm not talking about advertising above the urinals. I'm talking about ads in the urinals. Indeed, ads you whiz on. You know those plastic urinal screens that also deodorize? Whizmark has now accessorized them with ads. Not some bland printed ad, either. Dr. Richard Deutsch, creator of the Whizmark, has brought to us the world's first, are you ready? Interactive urinal communicator. He offers one that has a motion detector. When a gentleman steps forward to do his business, a ring of flashing lights are triggered in the screen, drawing the gentleman's startled attention to your corporate logo, safely protected in the middle of the screen by a waterproof casing. Or if that's too subtle, Whizmark offers a voice and sound model with a microprocessor that shouts ad slogans and corporate jingles at the urinator. Still not tacky enough? Got you covered. Dr. Deutsch has the patent on a radio frequency model that can read your ID card and personally greet you when you step up to the urinal. Hey, Frank, good to see you again. This is Jim Hightower saying, I don't even want to know where the ad hucksters are taking us next.
Hi, my name is Sophie. For 5 years, I lived alone in this big house Joe and I built 35 years ago. Our girls grew up in this house. They visited every couple of weeks, and I loved seeing my grandkids, but most of the time I was on my own. Some days I didn't even go out. I just felt sad. Lonely, I guess. One day my daughter came over and said, "Get your coat, Mom, we're going for a drive." She wouldn't tell me where. When we got to the ASPCA, I got nervous. But once I met little Stevie, everything changed. Stevie's my cat. It's hard to express what a difference little Stevie's made in my life. It's mostly small things, like hearing his ridiculously loud purr. Stevie brought love back into my house. I may have saved his life, I don't know. But I do know that he made mine a lot brighter.
This is Richard Thompson, member of the board of directors of the ASPCA, encouraging you to visit your local animal shelter and adopt a cat.
Uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
Well, it looks like maybe we're going to be winning here in the House of Representatives. In the Senate, of course, the president's going to try and knock it down as much as he can, but time will tell. Despite the veto threat, UFCW Legislative and Political Affairs update number 44 here. Despite a veto threat and intense lobbying efforts by the Bush administration, the House of Representatives voted 223-193 in favor of an amendment to the Labor HHS Appropriations Bill that would restore overtime protection for America's workers. 22 Republicans joined every Democrat present in the House of Representatives to save overtime pay to That requires more emphasis. 22 Republicans joined every Democrat present in the House of Representatives to save overtime pay for up to 6 million workers. This bipartisan effort sends a strong message that America's workers, leaders, and communities do not support George Bush and his administration's overtime pay cut and the continuation by him, I would add, tossing my own words into this, of the war on labor, the war on America's middle class that was first declared by Ronald Reagan and that is still going full tilt boogie ever since there. This is a victory, UFCW notes, that we can all be proud of, but this is not the end of the battle. We must call for the president to back off his veto threats and explain why He would be willing to kill the important Labor HHS Appropriations Bill that would provide funds for education and health in order to slash the pay of millions of hardworking Americans. To discuss this and many other topics here, we've got a great group of people. Bob Potter, the president of UFCW Local 951. By the way, Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live from Grand Rapids. Grand Rapids, Michigan, WTKG, our Clear Channel affiliate here in Grand Rapids. Very pleased to be here. Fine, extraordinary bunch of folks showed up this morning. Hey there, here at the Celebration Cinema. And John Kakmaki's with us, the executive vice president of UFCW 951 and director of collective bargaining. And Todd Regis, the vice president of UFCW 951, the director of organizing. So we've got an all-star cast here. Let's start with you, Bob. You're sensing a change in the political winds.
I just had the opportunity in the last day to hear the results on the Cohut poll.
Uh-huh.
And also the most recent Pew poll. And both of those indicate that the presidential race has tightened up dramatically, back to a dead heat. We continue to have a lead here in Michigan for Senator Kerry, but on a national basis, it looks like 45-45, both by Cohut and by Pew. Yeah. Both of those are well-recognized polls. The bump that President Bush got off the convention, his convention, was very temporary, and I think it indicates that this election is going to be very close. There's a real urgency about what we have to accomplish in order to elect a president who's going to represent workers,
yeah.
And that is John Kerry.
And we need to be getting out there and participating in this. I mean, this isn't something that we can just kind of let slide by. This very well could be the most important election in our lifetimes. I mean, when you see that what Taft-Hartley did to the Wagner Act, you know, the Wagner Act of 1935 really kicked off the labor movement in the United States. Taft-Hartley in 47 sort of chopped part of it, you know, it took one rail off or whatever, and then Ronald Reagan came along, declared war on organized labor, and we've seen this, you know, rapid, I'm reluctant to call it a victory on their part or a decline on ours, but we're really seeing, I mean, there is a war on organized labor, and not just on organized labor, on working people. I mean, they didn't even want to increase the minimum wage here in the United States, and whoever is president is going to appoint 3 to 4 members of the Supreme Court who could be even more influential than the Congress was back with Taft-Hartley. I mean, this could be huge.
I think this is going to be the most critical election in my lifetime, both for organized labor and for workers in general. Your lead-in on the action on overtime, 6 million workers would have been negatively affected by President Bush's initiative to eliminate overtime for a key group of workers throughout this country. The first victory that we've had on this is that vote, where 23 Republicans in Congress actually came over to our side. We need to continue that pressure. Overtime is only one issue, but it certainly is indicative of what the Bush administration has tried to do to workers.
Yeah, and John Kerry's record on labor. One of my complaints about the Kerry campaign has been that they haven't, in my opinion, being a member of the media, as it were, they haven't done a good job of actually telling people some of the extraordinary things this guy has done and some of the positions he's taken. I mean, most people, just, you know, to take something a little esoteric, but, I mean, one of the major accomplishments when he was in the Senate was busting open BCCI, the Bank of Credit and Commerce International, which was a multinational criminal organization that tied together the Bush family and the Bin Laden family. And you know, it's like most people don't even, you know, the what? You know, and it was Kerry who just tenaciously, earning the eternal hatred of the Bush family in part, and certainly the Bin Laden family. Salim Bin Laden was involved in that, who was a partner with George W. and Harkin Energy, you know, busted that thing open. But what has George W. or George W. what has John Kerry done with regard to labor? Where does he stand, Bob Potter, in those issues?
John Kerry is, I think, not just a worker advocate, but John Kerry supports the middle class in this country. I had the opportunity to meet with him before he even won the nomination. And the first issues that he talked about with a group of labor leaders were issues about jobs,
yeah.
And what his plan was to secure the middle class in this country. Issues about health care, extremely important to workers as well. And issues that I think the nature of the campaign, the type of attacks that have occurred from the Republicans have really diminished Kerry's opportunity to get his record in front of people. I think when that record is fully disclosed in front of people, those issues will be important to the middle class in this country. And very frankly, the outcome of this election is going to be determined by who votes and what groups come out.
Yeah.
And clearly the urgency that we feel about this is that we want workers to vote. We want workers to turn out in droves at the polling places. We certainly want to see the middle class in this country have their voice heard. And I think the way to do that, obviously, is to encourage people to get to the polls this year. It's extremely important. Don't get the sense that somehow the Bush administration is going to win and therefore not vote. I think this will be a decisive victory for us in terms of the Kerry campaign, but that will be determined by who votes. If we get our people out, we win.
Yeah, yeah. And something that we have to do, and they are working so hard to try and keep the focus on things like phony documents or what John Kerry did in Vietnam, or for that matter, even what George... They're even willing to talk about what George Bush did in 35 years ago, as long as they can keep from talking about the fact that the middle class is being wiped out in the United States, that average wages have been declining steadily ever since Ronald Reagan was elected, and this whole voodoo economics, conservative economic war on labor began big time. I mean, it's a rollback to the 1880s, and one of the key points that Thomas Jefferson made over and over again is that without what he called the yeoman and plowman class, which today we would call plowmen being farmers and the yeoman being the workers, people who worked, that without the yeoman and plowman class, without the middle class, you can't have a democracy. Otherwise, you have a whole bunch of terrified serfs and a very wealthy senior class, which is called an aristocracy. And I mean, even back then, there was the same dynamic, the same argument going on. Alexander Hamilton, in the Constitutional Convention, the first speech he gave in 1787, stood up and said, "There has never been a form of government proven to be more stable and solid than aristocracy." And he was saying, we ought to emulate whatever we can from England. And thus began the war between Hamilton and Jefferson, which extended when they were both in Washington's cabinet and all the way until Hamilton finally got shot by Aaron Burr. But That war is still going on today. These two worldviews of should the United States be run by a powerful elite that is defined by corporate power, by and large. Now it's corporate power. Back then it was royal power or family power, or by we the people. We the people, democracy. And this is just such a critical issue, I think. John Kakmaki, you're the director of collective bargaining. John, what's happening with collective bargaining? What's UFCW up to these days? And what do you see organized labor up to in general?
Primarily, our biggest threat is Walmart, whether it's contract and in those negotiations we're talking about benefits and the fact that Walmart has very little benefits to offer its employees. Those employees, for the most part, have no paid time off if you're part-time, have no benefits if you're part-time, have no defined pension plan. And as a result, when we're in negotiations, whether it's with Meijer, Kroger, Rite Aid, Polly's, Harding's, et cetera, those employers all provide that for not just full-time employees, but for part-time as well. Yeah. And again, I want to emphasize the fact that providing benefits, health care benefits, providing a solid foundation for retirement, which is a defined pension, right. 401ks, guaranteed wage increases, all of those things. And Walmart is a gigantic, it is a huge threat to our collective bargaining agreements, and we're feeling the pinch every time we go to the table. And primarily it takes its toll in benefits.
Yeah.
And whether you're union or non-union, everyone is feeling the escalating cost of those benefits. In a union setting, those changes result in a higher deductible, whether it's weekly copays, whether it's a deductible going from $250 single to $500, whether it's going from $500 family per year to $1,000, to $1,500, to $2,000. And I'm reading now where it is not unlikely to expect in the next few years where a family deductible will reach $3,200 a year. That is a lot of money coming out of people's paychecks to help provide for benefit.
Yeah. And John, in many ways... Oh, by the way, let me just toss in here for our listeners. Our Brunch with Bernie segment is going to be in the second hour of our program today. Congressman Bernie Sanders, for those of you who have tuned in, who normally are expecting to hear this in the first hour, we're going to have Bernie on in the second hour. And if you'd like to call and participate in this conversation with Bob Potter, John Kakmaki, Todd Regis of the UFCW, our number is 1-866-889-8894, and I'm sure all of them would be more than happy to take your calls, comments, whatever. John, really... Walmart is now the largest employer in America. It used to be the General Motors, basically, defined the floor. I mean, when I was growing up, roughly 70% of Americans who were working, roughly 70% of America, we had 35% unionization, you know, back in the 40s or 50s. For every union job, there's another job that has equal benefits because the unions create this kind of competitive atmosphere in the labor marketplace. So more or less 70% of America could raise a family, have health care, have a pension, have a retirement. Now this is being wiped out as a result of the Reaganomics, Bushonomics, conservative economics. And the argument has been shifted by the cons, I think, to a large extent to, are these rights? Is it a human right? Do we really want to play the game of business in the United States in a way that ultimately benefits everybody in society, or do we want to play the game of business in a way that ultimately only benefits the very wealthy? Your thoughts. We've only got a few seconds left in this segment.
I think it all depends on what kind of society you want to live in. Is it an inherent right to have benefits? Perhaps not. On the other hand, I think it is a responsibility from corporate America to provide the best standard of living possible.
Yeah. Amen. I would take it a step farther. I, in my opinion, these should be considered human rights as a society. But you know, I would push it even farther. But that's, you know, we can continue with that discussion right after this break. It's 20 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman with you. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Waitsfield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Visit iowapeace.com for books on justice and peace. The Last Liberal Outlaw is Mike Palasek's new novel. Chuck Gregory with BlueEar.com had this to say. Palasek is at his best when writing about small-town America. It's a place he clearly loves, even as he pokes fun at its quirks and reveals the sickness that lies just below the surface. It's a place he knows, and he shares his knowledge in delightfully original ways, even as he cries out for change. We haven't had a writer like Palasek since Kurt Vonnegut was at his peak. Mike is an Iowa author, former federal prisoner for peace, small-town newspaper reporter, seminarian, and nominee for the U.S. House of Representatives in the Iowa Democratic Party 2000 election. For more information and more about Mike's other novels, visit iowapeace.com. The revolution won't be televised, but you can read about it. The Last Liberal Outlaw, A New American Revolution, is happening in the heartland.
For more than 27 years, the progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Due to the rising rate of overweight Americans, more hospitals are being forced to spend money on patient lift systems and specialized hospital beds and wheelchairs. The U.S. Center of Disease Control reports that 65% of American adults are overweight and 31% are obese. Sizewise Rentals, whom specializes in medical equipment for the obese, has reported its business growing 15 to 20% each year.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find Amoeba online at amiba.net.
Are you tired of progressives spending all their energy on defensive struggles where a victory simply maintains the status quo? We are too, and we're doing something about it. At ReclaimDemocracy.org, we're taking the initiative to revoke corporate power and restore citizen authority over corporations to enable genuine progress on the many issues that we all care about. Get involved. Visit us online at ReclaimDemocracy.org or call 406-582-1224.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Do you recall all the pledges I made?
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. We're at the Celebration Cinema, Knapp and Beltline in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Come on down. Come on down and see the program live. You're more than welcome to drop by. Great to see folks here. We're having a wonderful time. We've got Bob Potter, the president of UFCW Local 951, with us this hour. John Kackmackey, the executive vice president, UFCW 951. And Todd Regis, the vice president and director of organizing for UFCW 951. Jay Leno said it right, I think. He said, President Bush says he has just one question for the American voters. Is the rich person you're working for better off now than they were 4 years ago? Yeah, well, it seems like it is. And then of course, you got Dick Cheney saying, well, you're not making so much money. You know, there is eBay. You can sell everything in your house. But, you know, here's the reality. Tommy Thompson was asked, what about seniors and Medicare? And he says, try garlic, cloves, and leeches. Right. I mean, not his exact words. His exact words were, the Bush administration wants Medicare patients to question their doctors about alternative medicine. Yeah. Yeah. Not that I'm, you know, I have nothing against garlic and leeches or herbs and vitamins, which I take. But geez, I mean, let's have Medicare. Anyhow, John, you were making a point about Teddy Roosevelt. Back in 1908, 1909, I've got a clip of it that I play on the show from time to time. First, to the best of my knowledge, first used the phrase living wage. And he said it is a moral sin if anybody in the United States doesn't make a living wage, and that a living wage is enough to, and he laid out the criteria, to raise their family without having to resort to crime or, you know, in a middle-class fashion, to put their children through school, to pay for their health care, and to pay for education, including higher education, and to have retirement. It seems to me that that we as a society, you know, whether organized, you know, whatever the position is of organized labor, my opinion is that we as a society should say these are basic human rights in the 21st century. What are your thoughts on that?
I agree with that. I mean, you know, Bob talked a little bit about the overtime legislation that Bush assaulted. That's indicative of what's going on. And whether you're union or non-union, the idea to have paid time off is important to people. They need some time to spend with their family, their communities, their relatives and friends. And the idea that when you go to work with an employer and you get time off but it's unpaid is a joke.
Yeah.
A joke.
Yeah, and this is what the Bush administration, Bob, you look like you wanted to jump in on this.
Well, the issues about what has happened in the last 3 years of the Bush administration, we can't neglect some of the issues that workers really do care about. You know, when it's described as tax policy, people will have an indication that maybe they're not so interested. But what that really means is that monies that can go to support Medicare, for example, are diverted, and they go to wealthy individuals. Issues about foreign policy may initially not sound like a worker issue, but they truly are, because the money that's diverted by the war in Iraq, for example, is money that could support programs that benefit the middle class in this country.
Yeah, absolutely. And Todd Regis, your thoughts on this. Todd is the vice president of UFCW 951 here in Western Michigan, director of organizing. What are you seeing?
Tom, there's 44 million
people without health care in America right now. A poll that recently came out, 28 million children. And I think that's sad, and I think it's indicative of, you know, unions help build the middle class. For us to, for the middle class to continue to grow, I'm the son of an auto worker. My teeth are straight, and my glasses were always available because of my father's health care that was there. When we were talking to the audience earlier, you know, I was talking to a young lady who was telling me that she's at her place of employment for health care. And that's why she's staying there.
And yeah,
I think people understand how important that kind of issue is.
Absolutely, absolutely. This is, in fact, let me just put a plug in about, you know, how a middle class comes about as soon as we come back from this break. We're going to continue our conversation. We're at the Celebration Cinema, Nap and Beltline in Grand Rapids. Come on down, drop by. If you'd like, WTKG putting this thing together. Tom Hartman here with you. We'll be right back.
At last, there's a positive focus on a condition that affects millions. Read The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. John Rady, author of User's Guide to the Brain, says this about the Edison Gene.
Once again, with tireless scholarship and a bit of poetry, Tom Hartman helps take us to the edge of knowing ourselves, our brains, and our world.
The Edison Gene, available in bookstores everywhere.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner. The U.S. Justice Department announced yesterday that German computer memory manufacturing giant Infineon Technologies AG has agreed to plead guilty to international price fixing. The company conspired with other dynamic random access memory manufacturers to cheat Dell, Compaq, Hewlett-Packard, and others. The company will be required to pay a $160 million fine, the third largest price fixing penalty in U.S. history.
United Food and Commercial Workers Union locals in California have begun shopping for allies in Colorado and Ohio. Contracts covering more than 60,000 supermarket employees in San Francisco, parts of Colorado, and Cincinnati all expired on September 11th. UFCW locals from those three areas have begun negotiations toward an alliance. According to representatives of the UFCW, the massive unification is an attempt to give support to one another if contract negotiations turn into a fight. The alliance comes nearly a year after the nation's longest ever grocery strike and lockout in Southern California.
Contrary to the current trend, J.P. Morgan announced this week that it rehired 4,000 outsourced IT workers. Just 2 years ago, J.P. Morgan agreed to a $5 billion outsourcing deal with IBM, at the time one of the largest in the U.S. A company spokesperson said the employees are being rehired due to a recent merger with Bank One, which he said strengthened J.P. Morgan's technology infrastructure.
On Wednesday morning, after a night-long occupation of a Canadian paper plant that closed unexpectedly, disheartened workers returned to their homes. 400 workers were out of a job when the New Brunswick Pulp and Paper plant announced it was suddenly closing Tuesday. The plant, owned by Parsons and Whitmore of New York, said the closing was due to the high cost of wood and rising Canadian dollar. Union representatives at the mill are encouraging the workers to contact local officials who they blame for allowing the company to leave New Brunswick too easily.
Today's Dow Bob Report. Working women spend twice as much time as working men taking care of children and doing housework, according to a recent survey by the U.S. Labor Department. 78% of women and 85% of men hold jobs, but only 19% of men reported doing housework daily, compared to two-thirds of working women. Women also spent an hour and a half caring for a family member. The average man spent only 50 minutes. You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.com.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live from the Celebration Cinema at Knapp and Beltline in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Come on down this afternoon at 4 o'clock. We're doing a book signing at Schuller's on 28th Street. Special thanks to Phil Tower, one of the great geniuses of radio programming, who runs WTKG here, our Grand Rapids affiliate, and Steve Dirksen, who has so ably helped put this thing together, and to the folks at UFCW who have been supporting this program. Bob Potter is with us, the president of UFCW, Local 951, International Vice President. John Kakmaki, the Executive Vice President, UFCW 951, Director of Collective Bargaining. And Todd Regis, Vice President and Director of Organizing. If you'd like to call 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. And let's pick up a call from Jim in Atlanta on line 3. Hey, Jim, what's up? Rama, I'm not hearing Jim.
Well, Tom, there he is.
There you go. Hey, Jim, what's up?
Hello?
You're live and on the air, Jim. Don't listen to your radio. Listen to the telephone.
Very good. Thank you for Tom Hartman. I'd like to ask your guest there, what success are they having in organizing their folks to get to the polls? And I know that if there's a large turnout, we win. So could they talk to that for a few minutes? I'd like to see what kind of success they're having. Thanks.
Let me toss this first to Todd Regis. Thanks, Jim. That's an excellent question. The director of organizing here with UFCW. UFCW, by the way, the union that has been leading the charge against Walmart and one of the fastest-growing unions, if not the fastest-growing union in the United States, I believe. You guys are doing really good. I mean, you know, congratulations. Todd, your thoughts on that?
Sure. The United Food and Commercial Workers internationally has been very active with youth, with the younger members. Many of our members, roughly 50%, are under the age of 25. So the UFCW has been involved with Rock the Vote and other organizations that are out there informing young members why they should participate. We as a local and at the international level, I know many of our other locals have been out there registering voters. We've been doing this since early in 2004, registering our young voters. We only have 3 more weeks to do that for them to be able to vote in this election. We continue to do that.
That varies from state to state, by the
way.
Yeah.
Here in Michigan, we have 3 more weeks to do that. We're excited about that, having young people out there, encouraging them to vote. And then each and every one of our members sees information on a monthly basis right now about the election and key issues. There are many out there, health care, minimum wage, job protection, simple issues that not only do they relate to our members, but they relate to other people in the working class.
Yeah, remarkable. Bob Potter, president of the local and vice president of the international. What are your thoughts on how unions in general, not just UFCW, but how should the labor movement be? What should the labor movement be doing? What more can they do? And how can our listeners? I mean, we got a couple hundred thousand people all across the country listening right now. What can they do to support the efforts of organized labor to get out the vote to help get George Bush out of office?
I think I'd start already with the time period at the Democratic Convention. Organized labor was as united as I've ever seen it.
Yeah.
Mobilizing members to do voter registration is critical. But at the time of the election itself, we have to mobilize our members and our workers to get people to the polls. Absolutely essential. But labor is very cohesive on this issue. This is the first election in my memory where I've seen every segment of organized labor united behind the Kerry campaign. We want to win.
Yeah, and we must. I mean, this is I say this is the most. Everybody says this is the most important election in our lifetimes, and there's a whole bunch of reasons. Not the least of being that the Supreme Court can so powerfully. I mean, let's not forget that in 1923 the Supreme Court ruled that the minimum wage was unconstitutional. Or was it 1913? It was right in that era anyway, and that the Supreme Court had ruled against organized labor back in the 1890s and in the 1920s and on a number of cases. And it took the Wagner Act in 1935 to basically take them on. And then Franklin Roosevelt still couldn't get stuff done. He had to pack the court. And he just openly said, I'm going to pack the court. You know, and now we got George Bush saying he's going to pack the court. And what's he going to do if he packs the court? He's going to take us back to the world that Charles Dickens described in A Christmas Carol, where you've got Scrooge and Marley, the ownership class, saying, and you've got a bunch of terrified workers who have to put up with abusive employers, have no benefits, Tiny Tim can't get health care, there's no Christmas turkey. I mean, the thing that I find amazing is that most people, I think, alive today, particularly young people, particularly people under the age of 30 or 40 broadly, don't remember the things that those of us, us old farts here, I mean, I'm in my 50s, right? Those of us who remember what the 50s and 60s were like, and those of us who remember in that time learning the history of the 30s, you know, and the great Flint sit-down strike and so and the story of Joe Hill, you know, in Utah. And they just don't remember what sacrifices were paid to by what is we now call the organized labor movement, to bring about the middle class in America. We have had two periods of middle class in America. The first was during Jefferson's time, and it was fueled by cheap land. Everybody could be a farmer, and that's why the farmers were such a potent political force. In the 1880s, the Grange movement came out, and the progressives and populists split off from the Republicans. But then the industrialization of America and the consolidation of farms and the power of the railroads to make the big agricultural wholesalers so powerful started wiping out the farms, and the middle class vanished from 1880 to the 1920s, and workers became poorer and poorer and more terrified, and you had the Hoovervilles during and even the Roaring Twenties were a time of incredible disparity and incredible poverty in America, and so we had to recalibrate. We had to say, how can we again create a middle class in America? We're not going to be able to do it the way that Jefferson envisioned, by everybody having a farm. Can't do it. Too many people. So what do? So we say, okay, we get to set the rules of the game of business. We the people. I mean, because the rules of the game of business are played on the substrate of the court system, the laws, the banking system. I mean, we provide the whole infrastructure that business can operate on. So we get to say, hey, you guys want to play the game of business? Here's the rules. And the first rule is, it's got to benefit the middle class. It's got to help create a middle class. We are, and the cons, of course, say, well, you're artificially creating a middle class. Yes, we are. Yes, we are. And I think so many people have forgotten the very vital role that labor played in that. And how can we best, Bob Potter, how can we best remind them of that? I think that we have a massive education project that we've got to undertake. That just the simple idea, for example, so many people now have been indoctrinated by the cons to think that employers give you jobs. The reality is that if I work for somebody and they're not making more money from my labor than I am, then it's not a game that's worth playing for either one of us. The reality is I'm giving them my labor, and I don't want to say exploiting that. They're making money from that. And so we're providing them with a raw material, labor, an input. And it's almost been lost. I mean, George Bush walks around talking about, we're going to give people jobs. The paradigm has been redefined. How can we bring it back?
I think people have to understand the fact that they don't have a constitutional right to economic security in this country. Yeah. They gain economic security through the political process. We can look at any category and see what's happened in terms of groups of workers in this country that have become disenfranchised. We basically, for example, the lowest category in terms of voter participation in the last election in 2000 was a group of young women between the ages of 23 and 28. Very low participation in the process. They've got a lot at risk. Yeah. Unless we can convince people that they have to exercise their collective power through the legislative process, through voting, that economic security will disappear. And that has disappeared for a number of workers as jobs get moved overseas. You know, no one's protected anymore. It doesn't matter what your job is. If you're an accountant, your job can be, in effect, moved overseas. Right. And it's been proven. So everybody's at threat. And if they think somehow the legislative process in this country will protect them absent their participation, they're dead wrong.
Yeah. See, this is where I think we must regain the understanding of the paradigm. Is such a big word, but or zeitgeist or gestalt or whatever. We must regain an understanding of the fundamentals of how it works. You know, just simply saying taxes, for example. Taxes are the price of admission to a civil society. Labor, for example, there should be. It's insane that we have a minimum wage that guarantees poverty. I mean, why would a society collectively say we're going to have a minimum wage that guarantees poverty? It makes no sense to me. I really think we need to recapture the debate, the discussion, and take back the language in that. John Kakmaki, in your work as the director of collective bargaining for the UFCW here, what sort of blowback, what sort of feedback, what sort of myths are you seeing spun out by both labor, by folks who want to organize and perhaps don't really understand the bigger picture of what it's all about? They're just thinking about their own particular jobs, and how can we, you know, put this in the context so the people in America have the understanding that they did during the time of Franklin Roosevelt?
Well, I think we're under, you know, we've got a massive task ahead of us, which is just educating not just our union membership, but the general public. And I'll give you a couple of examples. If you take a look at that overtime law and the impact that'll have not just on union people, but on working class Americans across the country, there's starting to be a recognition of what's been going on. Another example, the idea of breaks. You know, most of our members still don't realize that the reason they have breaks is because of a union contract.
Right.
When you talk to a Walmart employee and they work those people 10, 12, 14, 15 hours a day, there was an assumption made on their part early on that they were supposed to get overtime after 8 hours. When they talk to us, under the law, overtime only kicks in after 40 a week.
Yeah.
So there is a rude awakening for some of these younger employees that work for Walmart in that there's this expectation of overtime, and there is not. And one of the things a union contract guarantees people in all of our contracts is overtime after 8 hours.
Yeah.
So more and more of those little pieces are starting to add up to a greater understanding of how these rights are being taken away piece by piece. And something that was something, you know, even the 8-hour workday, yeah, is under siege. 40-hour work week is under siege.
Yeah, the whole concept of workers having rights is absolutely under siege. Todd Regis, what do you see in terms of the ability I don't think the average worker in America realizes that the extent to which they may have good benefits or security, stable jobs, things like that, are the result of three generations of union work. Well, 10 generations. I mean, a multiple generation. But in particular, I mean, we had the golden age of the middle class here that tracks right back to unionization and really nothing else. I mean, it's right there. The peak of unionization was in the 40s and 50s. It was the peak of the American middle class. As unionization declined slowly down to 1980, the middle class started to slowly decline. In 1980, Ronald Reagan declared war on organized labor, and the middle class has been in free fall ever since. This goes beyond an issue of talking to union members. We need to be talking to everybody in America and saying, even if you don't have the kind of job that would be amenable to unionization, or never will, or you're not working for you're self-employed, whatever, it's still vital to support organized labor, because organized labor is defining the floor, just like Walmart is defining the ceiling. What are you seeing, Todd, in this regard?
Well, Tom, in the next 50 hours, everybody, no matter where they're listening from, is going to have a 48-hour weekend. The working class, many people are going to work on that particular day, but there's many people out there that may not be members of a union, but they have the day off or both days off, and they're going to enjoy that weekend with their family or whatever. And I think people have to realize that that's there because of the hard work of and the blood, sweat, and tears that were given by many people in labor fights years ago to demand days off. I mean, the 7-day work week doesn't exist because of people many years ago. Sweatshops don't exist. Child labor laws, John mentioned breaks. So many people don't realize that unless a state government has a law that requires lunches or breaks, it's not required. There's no federal law.
Yeah, John, and we've got a couple of calls here. John in Grand Rapids, Mike in Orlando. We've got about a minute and a half left in this segment. Let's quickly, John in Grand Rapids, your thoughts? Line one. Hey, John.
Tom, John dropped. How about line two?
John dropped. Okay, line two. Mike in Orlando, Florida. Hey, Mike.
Hey, Tom. If I can have a few minutes. There was a local hospital after the hurricane that released 18 people for not showing, and which I understand to an extent. When they are hired, they're told, you know, if there's any talk of a union, let management know. A few questions I have is, one, are they allowed to do that? Two, what would a union do to help in that situation? And three, how would they go about creating one there?
Excellent questions, Mike. Bob Potter, you want to? We're gonna run up against a break. We can finish it on the other side, but you can give it a shot at starting. Thanks, Mike, for the call.
Thanks.
I'll start with your first question. Can they do that? Yes, they can. Workers do not have a right to their jobs absent a union contract. So could an employer fire them, even a hospital, for somebody not showing up given the circumstances of the hurricane there? Absolutely they can. Workers do not have rights unless they have a union contract.
Right, and that's one of the reasons why it is so necessary to lay this stuff down. If capital can organize, if corporations can organize, if they can form trade unions, if they can buy other corporations, if they can organize, and they are all the time at chambers of commerce, if they can, why can't we? Why can't labor? I mean, I just don't understand why the average American doesn't get this. They go, oh, labor unions, that's somehow something strange. Don't they get it? Corporations are organizing, right? Now I'm starting to foam at the mouth here, you guys. Anyhow, it's the Tom Hartman radio program. We're here with Bob Potter, John Kakmaki, Todd Regis, with the fine help of Steve Dirksen and Phil Tower of WTKG. Here at the Celebration Cinema, we'll be here broadcasting live all 3 hours today, Nap and Beltline. Come on down. Book signing at Schuller's at 4 o'clock at 28th Street. We'll be right back.
This is Vilnik Raskin. I'm the president and founder of the Organic Wine Company. What happened when you, Thomas, gave us a plug, the phone started ringing. The first person said, whatever it is that you're selling, I want to buy it. And for the next few hours, the phone rang nonstop. The people who listen to your program are what they call in the business my target audience, people who are conscious and responsible and try to do the right thing and try to think for themselves. I would encourage anyone to advertise on the Thomas Hartman Show, absolutely, without question, whether that be on the national level or the local level, and you will absolutely get results. The way you can learn more about our imported organically grown wines from France is by calling us. The phone number is 1-888-ECO-WINE, or you can visit our site at www.ecowine.com.
Now, it's time for This Billionaire Moment.
A criminal investigation is underway over Halliburton's $180 million payment to Nigerian officials for a natural gas project back when Dick Cheney was the CEO. Critics call this bribery, but in many countries, bribes are just part of the political culture. Why should Dick's company be punished for being sensitive to local customs? You give money to politicians and they give favors to you. We do it all the time here in the U.S., only we call it a campaign contribution, and no one seems to object. South of the border, it's la mordita, the little bite, and in the Middle East, it's bakshish. No matter what you call it, it's smart business. I'm Xenophobe for This Billionaire Moment.
This Billionaire Moment is brought to you by BillionairesForBush.com.
Kick up the billionaire!
On September 17th, I'll be broadcasting live on WTKG AM 1230 in Grand Rapids at the Celebration Cinema, noon to 3 p.m. at the corner of Knapp and East Beltline. Drop by early at 11 a.m. in the Wave Room for a get-together, then listen to the show. At 4 p.m. after the show, I'll be at Schuller Bookstore on 28th Street for a book signing. For more information, call 616-776-5541. That's 616-776-5541.
Can you imagine a world in which all kids live healthy, safe, productive, and prosperous lives? Well, that world is within our grasp, and there's a way to reach it. It's called Econonomics. And to learn more, just pull up DennisWeaverNow.com and learn how to get a free report of our Econonomics educational program and how together we can build a world of prosperity without pollution. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com.
This is a Workers' Independent News Service feature story. I'm Sarah Turner. 1,500 unionized federal government workers scored a major victory on Wednesday with an amendment halting the outsourcing of immigration processing work to private companies. The amendment was added to a $32 billion Department of Homeland Security financing measure by just two votes, with five Republicans supporting the Democrats.
There may be some vocations that privatizing is a good thing. However, when it comes to national security and the Department of Homeland Security's ability to protect the American public, these are not the positions that should be privatized.
Charles Showalter, president of the National Homeland Security Council, AFGE, says there's been trouble with private companies who've been entrusted with screening immigration applications.
Unfortunately, every time we privatize jobs within the Department of Homeland Security, we run into major problems. Down in California, when a contractor ran behind, they shredded 90,000 applications for benefits within the Immigration and Naturalization Service.
He also believes only trained professionals should be performing criminal background checks.
These jobs are privatized to somebody earning minimum wage to increase company profits. We run a greater risk of people being compromised in the positions that face it. These officers deal with criminal background investigations. They deal with counterterrorism efforts, and it's not the type of information that we want the general public to have access to or even have the ability to manipulate.
The amendment throws a wrench into congressional leaders' plans to recess for the year in October, before the November 2nd presidential and congressional elections. George Bush has threatened to veto the entire funding measure, saying that privatization will improve customer service and save money.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
It's coming through a hole in the air from those nads in Tiananmen Square. It's coming from the...
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live from the Celebration Cinema Nap and Beltline in Grand Rapids on WTKG, our home station here in western Michigan. Book signing this afternoon is Schuller's, 4 o'clock, 28th Street. And we're here with Bob Potter, the president of the UFCW Local 951, International Vice President, John Kakmaki, Executive Vice President, UFCW 951, Director of Collective Bargaining, and Todd Regis, the Vice President of the UFCW 951 and Director of Organizing. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. We've got about 3 minutes here left in this segment. Got a couple of calls. Mike in Orlando on line one. Hey, Mike, what's up?
I just wanted to clarify the question. I was pressed for time and didn't ask it correctly. What I wanted to see was when they are told at work that if you hear of a union, tall management, and that really scares them not to talk of union. So how do you even go about getting it started? And you know, what repercussions can they do? Can they fire you for even talking union?
Should we toss this to Todd? Yeah, Todd, you're the director of organizing. What are your thoughts on that?
Sure.
How do you do this? What do you do?
Sure. National Labor Relations Act has some clear things that companies can and can't do. Ultimately, you could be fired for that, but you do have some repercussions within that. And I think if somebody went to www.nlrb.org, they'd be able to look at the act and see what the rules say. And certainly, I would encourage anyone that's interested in think about a union. AFL-CIO.org is a great place to look with all sorts of information about it.
Todd, Todd, a lot of folks don't have the time or, I mean, frankly, reading a lot of legalese in an ad is not even something that I find pleasant. Is there a number that they call? What should they do around the country? I mean, shouldn't they just call their local union, union local?
Absolutely. They can call 1-800-999-0951 nationwide, which is UFCW Local 951. They can be directed to our office, and we'll be more than happy to pass them on to the appropriate union throughout the state that they live in.
That's great. Todd, give that number one more time.
It's 1-800-999-0951.
Okay, great. 1-866-889. Thanks, Mike, for the call. 1-866-889-8894. Armin in Sarasota. Armin, I got you. Say that again.
Hello?
Armin, you got about 10 seconds.
I think if Jesus Christ were alive, I think he'd throw the money changers that operate this regime out of the temple and the White House.
There you go. I agree, Armin. Bob Potter, thanks so much for being with us. The president of the UFCW, John Cacmackey, executive vice president, Todd Regis. We're at the Celebration Cinema, Nap and Beltline here in Grand Rapids. Come on down. Second hour, third hour. Next hour, we've got brunch with Bernie, Congressman Bernie Sanders. Third hour of the program, we're going to be pulling folks out of the audience and in here, put you on the air, let you ask your questions, make your comments, see what you have to say. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
The following phone call was not recorded on February 30th, 2004.
Thank you for calling about DirecTV. My name is Lynn. How can I help you?
Thank you, sir. Thank goodness you're there. You've got to help me. My cable company is raising their rates again. I don't know what I'm going to do.
It's okay, ma'am. I'm here to help. I'm glad you called.
They're taking away our favorite channels and charging more. It's just wrong.
Ma'am, I get that all the time. Let me help you right away. Would you like to get over 125 channels of your favorite programming for only $39.99?
Will I still be able to get my local channels?
Absolutely. And because you called American Satellite right now, you can get up to a four-room DirecTV system for free and free professional installation for all new customers with an annual programming commitment.
Oh, thank you. My husband, Nick, is going to be so happy.
Call American Satellite at 1-800-505-1542. That's 800-505-1542. Call now and ask how you can get total choice for only $29.99 a month for the first 6 months. A $60 value. 800-505-1542. At $4.99 a month per second in each additional receiver. Offer ends July 17, 2004. Call.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner. The U.S. Justice Department announced yesterday that German computer memory manufacturing giant Infineon Technologies AG has agreed to plead guilty to international price fixing. The company conspired with other dynamic random access memory manufacturers to cheat Dell, Compaq, Hewlett-Packard, and others. The company will be required to pay a $160 million fine, the third largest price fixing penalty in U.S. history.
United Food and Commercial Workers Union locals in California have begun shopping for allies in Colorado and Ohio. Contracts covering more than 60,000 supermarket employees in San Francisco, parts of Colorado, and Cincinnati all expired on September 11th. UFCW locals from those three areas have begun negotiations toward an alliance. According to representatives of the UFCW, the massive unification is an attempt to give support to one another if contract negotiations turn into a fight. The alliance comes nearly a year after the nation's longest ever grocery strike and lockout in Southern California.
Contrary to the current trend, J.P. Morgan announced this week that it will rehire 4,000 outsourced IT workers. Just 2 years ago, J.P. Morgan agreed to a $5 billion outsourcing deal with IBM, at the time one of the largest in the U.S. A company spokesperson said the employees are being rehired due to a recent merger with Bank One, which he said strengthened J.P. Morgan's technology infrastructure.
On Wednesday morning, after a night-long occupation of a Canadian paper plant that closed unexpectedly, disheartened workers returned to their homes. 400 workers were out of a job when the New Brunswick Pulp and Paper plant announced it was suddenly closing Tuesday. The plant, owned by Parsons and Whitmore of New York, said the closing was due to the high cost of wood and rising Canadian dollar. Union representatives at the mill are encouraging the workers to contact local officials who they blame for allowing the company to leave New Brunswick too easily.
today's Dow Bob Report. Working women spend twice as much time as working men taking care of children and doing housework, according to a recent survey by the U.S. Labor Department. 78% of women and 85% of men hold jobs, but only 19% of men reported doing housework daily, compared to two-thirds of working women. Women also spent an hour and a half caring for a family member. The average man spent only 50 minutes. You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
No, not the yacht.
Darling, wake up. You're having a nightmare.
Oh, it was terrible. Oh. I dreamed we lost our billions, and we were middle class.
There, there.
We were both working, and we could barely pay our bills. The children had to go to public schools. Oh. We had something called an HMO.
Oh, you poor thing.
It seems so real. We couldn't even afford my Botox.
Oh, sweetheart, go back to sleep. I'll write another campaign check tomorrow.
President George W. Bush, keeping alive the American dream. For some of us.
Easily paid for by billionairesforbush.com.
I can't begin to tell you how proud I am of the assaults that Bush, Cheney, and gang are making on America's decorated veterans. Of course, they're all over John Kerry, who's running to depose this regime of chicken hawks. Using a former Nixon hatchet man as their tool, they're assailing Kerry for his three Purple Hearts and two other Medals of Valor. The Bushites want you to believe that such honors are doled out like prizes and boxes of Cracker Jacks, which is as close as they got to any war medals. But how about Max Cleland? The former U.S. Senator from Georgia doesn't need medals to show his bravery and sacrifice. He came home from Vietnam minus two legs and an arm. Yet this is not enough for the Chicken Hawks, who have actually tried to suggest that he didn't deserve his Bathed in the Blood medals. Indeed, when Cleland pulled his wheelchair up to the front gate of Bush's ranchette outside of Crawford, Texas, where the president was vacationing in August, George dispatched his aides to tell Cleland that the prez was too busy vacationing even to accept the letter that he had come to deliver. It was a letter calling on the Bushites to stop their dishonorable political attacks on decorated vets. "Where is the shame?" asked Cleland, sitting in the hot August sun in his wheelchair after George W. stiffed him. Shame? Bush is immune to shame. He used family connections to avoid going to Vietnam in his day, where he might possibly have encountered the kind of injuries that Cleland suffered, though Bush proclaimed that he supported that war with all of his heart. So did Vice President Dick Cheney, who's also now assailing Kerry's war record. Dick, who grabbed five draft deferments to keep him from having to face the reality of war, smugly says, "I had other priorities in the 60s than military service." This is Jim Hightower saying, those who had other priorities while cheering the war from afar ought not now be sliming those who put their lives at risk.
This is a financial update. Average mortgage rates took a slight dip this week.
Sorry to interrupt, but LendingTree.com is the only place where banks compete over your mortgage. Then you get up to four real offers to choose from within minutes. So do better and choose from low rates. Call LendingTree now at 1-800-555-TREE. That's 1-800-555-TREE. When banks compete, you win at LendingTree.com. Equal housing opportunity. Some restrictions apply. See website for details and licensing.
Hello from the road, folks. You know, the only thing better than a twofer is a threefer. That's why this fall I'm staying at Econo Lodge and Roadway Inn Hotels. See, I get triple Southwest Airlines Rapid Rewards credit every time, so I earn flights three times faster. Call 800-4-CHOICE or visit choicehotels.com. We'll see you there.
Offer good for qualifying stays in the U.S. before November 30th, 2004. For details, visit choicehotels.com. Triple credit means 1.5 credits instead of a standard 0.5.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman again.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live from the Celebration Cinema at Knapp and Beltline in downtown Grand Rapids. Well, not downtown, but in Grand Rapids, Michigan. WTKG, our affiliate here, sponsoring, hosting us. Much appreciated. Tom Hartman with you. It's the it's Friday afternoon. Time for Brunch with Bernie, Congressman Bernie Sanders, America's only independent congressman. I think of Bernie, although he's my congressman from Vermont, I think of him as America's congressman. In fact, we've got three folks from Grand Rapids sitting here in the studio with us. We're in a studio. Hey, Bernie.
How are you, Tom?
I am great. We're sitting here in a studio in Grand Rapids in a theater. It's an actual movie theater, but they got a studio right on the ground floor, and they got chairs set up outside, and people are sitting out there, and we got a couple of folks in here from Grand Rapids who have questions for you. We will also, of course, take calls from our callers. Our number 1-866-889-8894 if you'd like to be on with Congressman Bernie Sanders. And before we get to the questions, Bernie, what's up? What's on your plate? What's on your mind right now?
Well, what's on my plate is obviously the entire country is paying a great deal of attention to this presidential election. And my hope is that we don't get diverted by this or that media show, but we pay attention to what's really happening to real people in America. You know, what politics is about is often the politics of diversion. It's like a shell game. It is important that we focus what's happening to the vast majority of the people, the middle class of this country, and I think if we do that, what people will perceive is Bush's policies, whether it's regard to economics, with regard to prescription drugs, health care, the environment, have been a disaster for the middle class, and that the time is now for a real change. So that's my message for the day. Stay on the real issues. We can bring about some changes.
Amen. Well said. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number right here in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Glenn is with us in the studio. And Glenn from Grand Rapids. Glenn, your thoughts, comments? You're live.
I'd like to say hi to Congressman Sanders. My question is this. Tom DeLay, he intrigues me and horrifies me. I'd like to know what kind of tactics he uses with the Republicans there in the House.
Well, that's Glenn, a great
that's
question.
A very good question. I think it's fair to say, and I won't be letting out any information out of school here, is that Tom DeLay is a right-wing extremist. And Tom DeLay is an enormously hard-working, focused guy, and I have to respect that. And his general attitude toward life is you win at any cost. So yeah. He, for example, manipulated the and put pressure on the Texas legislature to reconfigure the congressional districts in Texas in an unprecedented manner, just a couple of years after the last redistricting, so that the Republicans can pick up more congressional seats. In the House of Representatives, what he does, he is prepared, again, in an unprecedented way, to say that at the end of the voting period, we have 17 minutes to cast our votes. Yes. At the end of that period, if his side is losing on important issues, and we saw this on the Medicare issue, he doesn't have the speaker then say, well, okay, we lost. He says, okay, we're going to keep the voting rolls open until we can twist enough arms. And after 3 hours, they managed to twist a few arms and win the Medicare vote 3 hours longer than the schedule was. I introduced an amendment a couple of months ago on the USA Patriot Act. At the end of the vote, I was ahead, my memory is, by 15, 20 votes. He twisted some Republican votes, kept the rolls open another 17 minutes, and they managed to defeat the amendment. So this is a guy who doesn't believe in losing no matter what he has to do. And this should be of concern to all Americans.
Yeah. And Bernie, you said that this was unprecedented.
It is unprecedented. What history will show you is there never has been an instance where the voting rolls were kept open for 3 hours. Now, some people say, well, the Democrats did it. They did. But not for 3 hours and not the way that DeLay is doing it right now. The rules don't matter too much. We can amend the rules if it means that we can win. And this is using power in a way that we have not seen, I think, forever on the floor of the House.
Even in the 1880s, during the height of the corruption of the Gilded Age, we haven't seen anything like this in 228 years.
I'm not a historian, but that's what I'm told. But I can tell you also that they keep their people very disciplined. One of the sad things is that the truth of the matter is not every Republican in the House of Representatives is an extreme right-winger like DeLay. But I have to tell you that I think many of the moderate Republicans have thrown in the towel. They've sold out their principles, and they have followed this guy. And I think one of the reasons, again, is he is very strong on party discipline. If you buck him, if you disagree with him, if you vote against him, you're going to get punished. And a lot of these so-called moderate Republicans have not shown the courage to do that.
Yeah, and they're afraid of that. Joe, answered your question?
Yes.
Okay, great.
Yes.
Thanks very much, Joe, for the question. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number, by the way. And we've got another person here in the studio. Your name is?
Larry.
Hey, Larry, you have a question for Congressman Sanders.
Hi, Bernie.
Hey, Larry.
As a person who has a family member with a severe mental illness, we were interested a while back, some years ago, when you were talking about parity coverage to finally start treating mental illnesses
right.
with the same coverage that other people, say, with cancer get. Has there been any movement on that front?
Well, you know, the late Senator Paul Wellstone led the effort on that parity approach and had some success. I think the problem is, if you were to ask me, Larry, that at a moment when the healthcare system in America is disintegrating, if you were to ask me what part of that system is disintegrating the worst, I would have to tell you it is psychological services. And that many HMOs, for example, have made savage cuts in the kind of payments they make to counselors, psychiatrists, psychologists, and we are seeing the impact of that. So many of us agree with the principle that you've just established. Mental health issues are not any different than cancer or diabetes. They should be fully funded, but we've got a long way to go to do that.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, thanks for that question, Larry. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Rick in Grand Rapids is on line one. Hey, Rick, you're live with Congressman Sanders. What's on your mind?
First of all, welcome to Grand Rapids, Tom.
Thank you. Oh, it's great. It's great being back here in the city in which I was born. Yeah, I was born in Grand Rapids. Yep.
Well, welcome
and,
back.
Yeah.
Bernie, I heard you talking about Tom DeLay.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this now. You just alluded to the fact that it's not just progressive people, but even some moderate Republicans that are kind of afraid of this guy. Let's just hope for the best case scenario from your perspective, understanding that the House Majority Leader would have to be somebody that's somewhat conservative. Can you think of any principled conservatives in the House of Representatives that you could live with as a majority leader? You know, someone that would be conservative as far as their principles, but maybe less of a thug, you know? Any names you can
come
up with?
I mean, here's the irony that the truth of the matter is that the guy who is supposed to be running the Republicans in the House is the Speaker.
Sure.
And the Speaker's name is Dennis Hastert. I think Dennis is a very pleasant guy, much friendlier, more moderate, we believe, if left alone, than is Tom DeLay. The irony here is that the Speaker is not running the show.
Right.
And what most people believe, it is Tom DeLay who is using Hastert as a front guy.
Yes.
Probably left alone, I think you would see a guy like Denny Hastert being much less partisan and much fairer. Than Tom DeLay.
Am I correct that even Gingrich and Army are a little more moderate, or were a little more moderate than this guy?
I would probably say yes. Gingrich, you know, is always trying to defend his positions with an intellectual argument.
Sure.
You know, he would tell you why he believed in this and that. I think that Tom DeLay is more of a true believer. But when you see Tom DeLay on television, you say, hey, you know, this guy doesn't seem to be very effective in making his arguments, and the reason is I don't think he believes that he has to make the arguments. I think he is a driven guy. I think he thinks that God is on his side and he's doing God's work. So to answer your question, yeah, he is, in my view, much more extreme.
One last question. Where is this investigation going of him, do you think?
Well, you know, it's kind of deadlocked. You know, with the Republicans controlling the House, I wouldn't hold my breath with some major breakthroughs here.
Yeah. Thanks for the call, Rick. Good to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. We have another guest in the studio. Your name, sir?
Joe.
Hey, Joe. And your question for Congressman Sanders.
It's a pleasure speaking to you, Congressman Sanders. I've always liked to be an informed person on what's going on everywhere, is because I find it. The newspaper in this area is very sanitized to find out both sides of the issues. 18 months ago, I was a victim of a layoff because of my insurance rate went up 28% on my health insurance. And then I noticed they create a lot of confusion on the Medicare card. And it's like 72 cards or something like that. And if you pick the wrong one, you know, you're out of luck, you know. And then 06, I understand they're going to have a, if your health provider decides to drop you because you're going to be put on Medicare anyway, because your ex-employer don't want to carry you no more because
because you're going to have this so-called government program now.
Right, and then if you end up with who's going to be responsible if you have any, let's say, bypass surgery or any other real expensive needs in the hospital, is the Medicare going to cover it all?
Well, let me just answer you this way, Joe. I mentioned earlier, in my view at least, the healthcare system is disintegrating right before our eyes. In the last, since Bush has been president, we have seen about 5 million more people lose all of their health insurance. I gather you are one of those people. Is that correct?
I didn't lose it. I worked for the school system, so I was put on state retirement, and I presently have insurance through the state. But
shifted over from the private to the state.
Right.
But there are many parts of the state where there are not, of the country where there are not state programs that can pick up. For example, in Vermont, if you get laid off, it takes you a period of time before you can get into the state program. The issue here is we should be clear that there are a couple of directions that we could go. And on this issue, somebody like President Bush or Tom DeLay and my views are very different. The first question, Joe, that we have got to deal with, and I don't know your view, I'd like to hear your view, is why is the United States the only major industrialized country on earth that does not guarantee health care to all of its people as a right of citizenship?
Because
we have a system that's employer-based, so you lose your job, then your whole health care situation changes. If you can't get any job, you're without any health insurance. Unless you're very low income, you can get Medicaid. I don't think that that makes a lot of sense, and I think the United States should join with the rest of the industrialized world in moving forward toward a national health care program. The second issue is that what Bush and his friends really want to do is, in fact, substantially weaken and privatize programs like Medicare.
Yeah, let's finish up with that, Bernie, just on the other side of this break, and we'll keep Joe in the studio here. You can continue the conversation because it's a great one.
So I think they're making a bad situation worse, which could result in disaster for a lot of sick and lower-income people.
Amen.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Who is it?
Special delivery.
Who?
Pizza Man.
Hey, you're not the Pizza Man. You're the cable guy. Again.
Price Patrol.
No, you're not. I can see your van. You're the cable company. I'm not going to let you raise my rates again. I'm calling American Satellite to get a DirecTV system.
Presidential candidate.
Are you going to offer me over 125 digital quality channels for as little as $39.99 a month, including my local channels?
Ice Cream Man.
Yeah, like that's going to work. If I call American Satellite right now, I can get a 4-room DirecTV system, including professional installation free. Can you beat that?
Pizza Man.
You already tried that. Well, that's it. I'm calling to get my DirecTV system.
Call 800-505-1546. That's 800-505-1546. For new customers only. Annual programming commitment required. Ask how you can get your first 6 months for only $29.99 a month of $60 value. Offer ends July 17th. Call now. 800-505-1546.
A must read, The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. Ed Halliwell, a nationally recognized expert on ADD, said this about The Edison Gene.
Tom Hartman demonstrates that ADHD can be associated with creativity, high achievement, and a most successful adaptive style.
The Edison Gene, now available in bookstores everywhere.
Hey, what does this word make you think of? Tchaikovsky.
Gesundheit. So what's the word?
No, that is the word.
You lost me.
All right, who's Martha Graham?
She invented the graham cracker. Before her, there was only soda crackers.
Maybe they're not getting enough art. Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Tchaikovsky's music and Martha Graham's dance. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
Visit iowapeace.com for books on justice and peace. The Last Liberal Outlaw is Mike Palasek's new novel. Chuck Gregory with BlueEar.com had this to say. Palasek is at his best when writing about small-town America. It's a place he clearly loves, even as he pokes fun at its quirks and reveals the sickness that lies just below the surface. It's a place he knows, and he shares his knowledge in delightfully original ways, even as he cries out for change. We haven't had a writer like Palasek since Kurt Vonnegut was at his peak. Mike is an Iowa author, former federal prisoner for peace, small-town newspaper reporter, seminarian, and nominee for the U.S. House of Representatives in the Iowa Democratic Party 2000 election. For more information and more about Mike's other novels, visit iowapeace.com. The revolution won't be televised, but you can read about it. The Last Liberal Outlaw, A New American Revolution, is happening in the heartland.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live from the Celebration Cinema. Come on down, Napa and Beltline, if you live in Grand Rapids or in western Michigan. We're bringing folks in from the audience here to talk with Congressman Bernie Sanders. This is our Brunch with Bernie segment here on Friday. We'll also, at 4 o'clock this afternoon, have a book signing at Schuller's Bookstore, 28th Street, here in Grand Rapids. We are the guests of WTKG, our affiliate, a Clear Channel station here in Grand Rapids, Michigan. And Congressman Sanders, Joe wanted to just follow up his question to you. And so, Joe, go ahead.
Okay, I think you're in the middle of answering that question, the last one I had. But also, one question comes to mind about our veterans, particularly the ones in reserve in the National Guard. What's their status in their health care right now at Camp Stewart? Because
I can't answer at Camp Stewart, but I could answer that nationally we're not doing terribly well by our National Guard's people, especially given the fact that so many of them are over in Iraq and Afghanistan. And second of all, that the way we treat our veterans in general is an absolute disgrace. Joe, are you a veteran, Joe?
Yes, I am.
Yeah, you may know that just last year, at the same period when this president gave hundreds of billions of dollars in tax breaks to the very wealthiest people in this country, he threw 160,000 veterans, so-called Level 8 veterans, off of VA health care in Vermont. I don't know about Michigan. But all over this country, there are long waiting lines before veterans can get the health care that they need. Bush's new budget, is a disaster for veterans, would raise prescription drug fees, provide for other fees. So I think, to answer your question, Joe, we are not taking very good care of our National Guard's people or our veterans in general.
Joe, did that that gets it
right
for you?
I feel ashamed of this government.
Yeah.
Really is. You know, people, I'm against the war, and our friends were for the war and so forth, but the issue is not whether you're for the war or not, but whether you appreciate the fact that when people put their lives on the line, not only in Iraq, but in the first Gulf War, in Vietnam, or wherever, that when they come home, the government has got to keep its end of the bargain, and you don't turn your back on those people. I have people calling me up who are 80 years old who fought in World War II who cannot get into the VA healthcare system because they earn more than $25,000 a year. And that is a simple outrage.
Well, Sandra Levin helped me out in a crisis one time.
Good.
And I really feel that these people pay their dues. I think they're due their, you know, they paid, did their obligation, and they deserve what they, everything that we can
and
get.
And that was the deal. That was the deal you guys understood when you signed up. I mean, it was
right.
Explicit. In fact, it was a big recruiting tool.
Right. Or even
Joe, you're absolutely right. And you know, one of the issues that really bothers me is the kind of priorities being established by this administration. I don't know how you sleep at night. Giving
yeah.
tax breaks to billionaires and then telling veterans with their lives on the line that we can't.
I noticed Bush's medical records is almost an inch thick, so he must have been well taken care of as a National Guard man. Why didn't he provide a DD-214 showing his discharge paper so we could all see the true? But unfinished
yeah.
now. Thank you very
yeah,
much.
That's
well,
a different,
thank you,
that's
Joe.
A different topic.
Thanks,
Joe, thanks for thanks for being with us. Just because we're bringing in folks in the studio to ask questions of Congressman Sanders doesn't mean you can't call in our toll-free number, 1-866. Please do, 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number if you'd like to be on the program. It's the Tom Hartman Program, our Brunch with Bernie segment, Congressman Bernie Sanders, America's independent congressman. We're broadcasting live today. At least I'm Bernie's live in Vermont. I'm live in Grand Rapids, Michigan at the Celebration Cinema, Knapp and Beltline. Come on down and drop by. This afternoon we'll have a book signing, 4 o'clock at Schuller's Bookstore. And thanks especially to Steve Dirksen and Phil Tower for helping put this thing together. Bernie, we've got a break that we're just coming up against here in a few seconds. But we've got another guest here, Bill, in the studio with us who has a question for you. We'll get to that right after the break. And let me just put the phone number out one more time. The lines are open if you'd like to call in, 1-866-889-8894. For Congressman Bernie Sanders and the Tom Hartman Radio Program, stick around. We'll be right back. For more than 27 years, the Progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner. The U.S. Justice Department announced yesterday that German computer memory manufacturing giant Infineon Technologies AG has agreed to plead guilty to international price fixing. The company conspired with other dynamic random access memory manufacturers to cheat Dell, Compaq, Hewlett-Packard, and others. The company will be required to pay a $160 million fine, the third largest price fixing penalty in U.S. history.
United Food and Commercial Workers Union locals in California have begun shopping for allies in Colorado and Ohio. Contracts covering more than 60,000 supermarket employees in San Francisco, parts of Colorado, and Cincinnati all expired on September 11th. UFCW locals from those three areas have begun negotiations toward an alliance. According to representatives of the UFCW, the massive unification is an attempt to give support to one another if contract negotiations turn into a fight. The alliance comes nearly a year after the nation's longest ever grocery strike and lockout in Southern California.
Contrary to the current trend, J.P. Morgan announced this week that it will rehire 4,000 outsourced IT workers. Just 2 years ago, J.P. Morgan agreed to a $5 billion outsourcing deal with IBM, at the time one of the largest in the U.S. A company spokesperson said the employees are being rehired due to a recent merger with Bank One, which he said strengthened J.P. Morgan's technology infrastructure.
On Wednesday morning, after a night-long occupation of a Canadian paper plant that closed unexpectedly, disheartened workers returned to their homes. 400 workers were out of a job when the New Brunswick Pulp and Paper plant announced it was suddenly closing Tuesday. The plant, owned by Parsons & Whitmore of New York, said the closing was due to the high cost of wood and rising Canadian dollar. Union representatives at the mill are encouraging the workers to contact local officials who they blame for allowing the company to leave New Brunswick too easily.
Today's Dow Bob Report. Working women spend twice as much time as working men taking care of children and doing housework, according to a recent survey by the U.S. Labor Department. 78% of women and 85% of men hold jobs, but only 19% of men reported doing housework daily, compared to two-thirds of working women. Women also spent an hour and a half caring for a family member. The average man spent only 50 minutes. You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.com.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Hang on tight to your dreams. Dreaming of a democracy in the United States. Dreaming of rights for workers in the United States. Dreaming of the middle class coming back in the United States. All these things possible. It's been done before. We have had it in this country. I guess you could take that both ways. We've had it good, and we're having it bad right now. We're with Congressman Bernie Sanders. It's our Brunch with Bernie segment. We got a couple of callers on the line. We've got a fellow here in the studio, so let's get right to it. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. On line one, Chris in Santa Fe, New Mexico on the line. Hey, Chris, what's up?
Hey, how you doing? I just turned on your radio and heard you guys talking about how they're not taking care of the vets, and I can firsthand story. I got back last year in September from the war, and I had in my medical rack jacket two surgeries that I had to get before they discharged me back into the regular workforce for my civilian employer, in which case the Navy promptly just said, well, we're not going to do them. You get them done on the outside. We'll pay for them, but we're not going to pay you while you're getting them done or anything, which means I was out of work for a while. My insurance for the family lapsed because I couldn't work for a period of about 6 months while I had three different surgeries done. And it was really an eye-opener to the fact that, you know, I held up my end of the bargain. Yeah, I did the reserve pay for 7 years, but when they called my number, I went. And when I got back and they kicked me off to the curb like that, it was kind of disheartening to see that they're not holding up their end of the bargain. And it's frustrating. But I'll tell you, the reason I'm calling is, that's one reason. Yes, I think it's bad that happened, but I don't think the president's entirely to blame. I don't know if I voted for him. I might have voted for him. I wish there were more choices. I don't like Kerry. I don't like Bush because of what both of them represent. I think the Congress has to be more accountable for what they haven't done. They're the ones that got the purse strings, if my economic understanding is correct, at how that thing works in our government.
Well, speaking of the Congress, Chris,
you're absolutely right on that. I think the way it works is the president submits a budget and Congress goes from there. Congress can throw that budget into the garbage can and do a hell of a lot better. But I have to tell you that it's not only this president who has been rather outrageous in terms of how we treat our veterans. It's been the Republican leadership as well. And you're right in saying that Congress is going to stand up and improve the situation. To some degree, we have, and I believe that we will. The president's budget is very, very inadequate in terms of what it provides for veterans. It would impose new fees for hospital care, for raised prescription drug costs. It is, in fact, a disaster. Congress will improve on it. But
I understand what you're saying, sir, if you mind me interrupting, but my concern is this, is that I have heard, and I don't have any specifics on this, but everybody knows what pork barrel is. And yep. you guys put the pork into those bills for your own constituencies in your own states or districts or areas that you represent. If you guys can fix those things and have those ride-ons go on, why in the heck can't you guys fix and say, you know what, we know the VA is getting under budget. Why don't we fix this?
Well, I think, Chris, what you have to do, you're absolutely right, no argument. Follow the debate. Find out who is fighting for substantially increased funding for the VA and find out who is not. So I don't want to be terribly partisan here, but if I think if you check the record, you will find that this Republican leadership is much more interested in the House and in the Senate in providing not only pork, but providing hundreds of billions of dollars in tax breaks to millionaires and billionaires. Now, that's what do you think about that? I mean, do you think it's appropriate?
We have huge sums of money
with tax breaks for folks who don't need it and not enough funding for our veterans.
I understand that, and I don't think that that's the only place where the budget is deficient. And I know I think it's the two-party system here that's breaking down a little bit, and it's very easy to point figures and say, gosh, look at the billionaires they took directly from the VA. Well, I'm sure that the Republican on the other side, and I don't give a hoot who's up there pointing the finger, they can both point because there's enough blame to go around on both sides of the table to say, you know, you guys took away from this, so we're going to take away from that.
Chris, you're right.
You know, and
you're right.
I was active duty when Clinton came and absolutely decimated the force and the active duty force to the point where we couldn't, man what we needed to do. We're out there flying in our squadrons. We have to have these what they called rob birds. We couldn't even afford the parts and find the parts to fix the planes to keep them flying. And they say go and deploy. And that was 8 years worth of Clinton where I was active duty, and we couldn't even get the supply system to work because there was no money then.
Well,
so you can't blame Bush and you can't blame
criticism.
Clinton.
But I would
solely.
Also tell
yes,
you that
there's
the people
blame to go
who control the government today, you have a Republican president, Republican House, and a Republican Senate. So if you want to talk about responsibility, I mean, I think you got to point the finger at these guys who really control what's going on
now. Chris, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. And in fact, the Republicans were in charge of spending during much of Clinton's administration. And Dick Cheney was one of the big ones out there saying, let's cut some, cut the military. 1-866-889-8894, line 2. Nick in Grand Rapids is on the phone.
Hi.
Hey, Nick.
Thanks
What's
for
up?
Taking my call. Hello?
Yeah,
Hello.
Go ahead. You're live.
Yeah, thanks, Tom. Welcome back to Grand Rapids.
Thank you.
My question is, why is not the Democrats, and John Kerry in particular, hammering on the issue of the environment, health care, the tie-in, the natural tie-in between the explosion of asthma, all these other issues? I mean, this is pathetic. You read the books written by Robert Kennedy, Crimes Against Nature, and some of these other books out there, and what can really be done to take care of this? I'll hang up and listen to your response.
Thanks, Nick.
Nick, you're absolutely right. This president received, if my memory is correct, an F from the League of Conservation Voters, one of the major environmental groups, and many people think he is the worst environmental president in the history of this country. And your point is also well taken, that when you're dealing with environmental degradation, when you're dealing with all kinds of crap in the air that people are breathing or in our food or in our water, you're talking about a health care problem. And there's no question to my mind, and I think to many people's minds, that we can improve health in America as we improve the environment. And it is an issue that Kerry certainly should be talking about every day.
Yeah. Thanks, Nick, for the call. Thanks, Bernie, for the comment. Kim in Eureka, California, on line 3. Hey, Kim, what's up?
Nothing much. While we were hitting on military, I kind of thought I'd throw out there that I am a spouse of an active duty military. I'm not sure if it's considered the homeland thing or not. I'm pretty sure we're into homeland at this point. But I just wanted to let you guys know that we qualify for free lunches. That's how little we make. And he's pretty high up there. We get free lunches in the state of California now for both of our children, and we're considered poverty. And he's worked now going on 10 years for the same force. So it's really difficult to make ends meet most of the time. We also suffer the wrath of having people. We live in Humboldt County. There has been plenty of his coworkers attacked. And we can't run around with stickers advertising what branch of military we work for, or else we'll get attacked. So there's all kinds of lovely things that are happening to the military. And I'm not in support of the war either, but the reason why people are all hip on Bush in the military standpoint is because he gave us a raise. I mean, it was like a $100 raise, but he gave us a raise. And that was a big thing, and that's why people were all, oh yeah, I'm voting for Bush, because he did give us a raise. And it's still not adequate to make ends meet. If we're still considered poverty level by the state of California, we're not doing that well.
Yeah.
So,
Kim makes a very, very good point. And it wasn't just the president who gave you a raise. It was Congress, too.
Right. Yes, I agree. Yes.
And there's no question. If you're asking people, soldiers, and their families to go through the stress and God knows what being in the military, and there's today just incredible stress on families, not only with active duty members abroad, but with National Guard's people as well. These people have got to be well compensated so they don't have to worry about whether their families are doing financially well or not. And we've got to raise, no question about it, we have to substantially raise the kinds of salaries that we pay our military people.
I remember back when we first started, we were living in Humboldt. It was our first route, and we also lost a couple. We lost a helo in which four people died, and I got to watch what their spouses went through shortly after they died. And to watch, they weren't even given enough money. First, they were booted out of housing within 6 months, as protocol. They have to get out within 6 months. And then they were given, well, they couldn't find the bodies of a couple of them, though they knew they were dead. So they weren't, but they did try to give them the insurance money, which didn't even allow some of them to buy a house. And it certainly didn't allow them to care for the children that were left behind. And at that time, we were only making, I think, maybe $500 a month, but we were getting free housing, so we were just happy about that because it was our first thing in almost said the name. Sorry. Want to stay away from the name so people can track me down about bagging on the government, but I do think that there is something that needs to be looked at least, you know, manage that we get the same as what people in the outside world. We've had people leave this job. My husband, he's a telephone tech, and he can easily go get a job on the outside for three times the amount he's making here, but he feels he's making a difference, so he decided to stay. And I applaud the people that give up their lives and go out and searching for people who are lost and do stuff like that. Because
Well said, Kim.
The pay itself
Kim,
is
thank you. Poor. Thank you very much, and I think what you're saying is probably news and new information for a lot of folks out there, but the bottom line is that we are underpaying our military, and we've got to do a lot better by
it. Kim, thanks for the call.
Thank you very much for your thoughts.
Thanks, Kim, for the call. Bernie, don't you think that just one really simple solution to some of the issues that Kim raised would be, number one, to dramatically increase combat pay, which I know Bush tried to cut, and number two, to give our soldiers a meaningful life insurance policy. I think it's set at $10,000 now, which goes back to World War II. $10,000, you can't, a widow can't establish herself or himself in that, you know, a widower, you know, back in life. I mean, and $100,000, $150,000, $250,000 life insurance policy isn't that big a deal.
It really is not. You're quite right. And,
just
and you're
just
right
these two simple things.
I think those are two of many other reforms that we need.
Yeah, okay. We got a couple more calls, and we got a fellow in the studio here. Bill is in the studio here in Grand Rapids, WTKG. Bill, your question for Congressman Sanders.
Hi, Bernie. A pleasure to talk to you, sir. I have a question regarding a health care issue. If we are lucky enough to get a Kerry Edwards administration, how soon do you anticipate any major reforms in our health care situation? And also, what can we do as far as the reasonable and customary charges most insurance companies are passed on to the individuals about?
Good question.
First part of your question, how soon will Kerry act? I would hope he starts acting on day one, because I will tell you, Bill, this system is just falling apart. I get phone calls every day, and I talk to people every day about insurance companies not paying what they're supposed to, people losing their work, not being able to find any affordable insurance, people not being able to afford prescription drugs. So I would hope that Kerry will make health care certainly one of the major initiatives that he's going to move forward on and move forward as soon as possible. The second question is customary and usual. You have insurance companies, and Tom, you remember the call we got, I think it was last week on the show, where a woman actually found out when her husband, I believe, had a heart attack, that the company had unilaterally changed its policy and that they lost
changed
a
her
lot
coverage.
Of coverage. You recall that?
Yeah. Yeah, it had changed her coverage and never bothered to tell her.
So I think, you know, we should be very aware, Bill, the function of insurance companies, private insurance companies, is not to provide health care to people. It's to make money. And if they can avoid paying out what they should be paying, that's exactly what they will do. Obviously, the federal government has got to do everything it can to make sure that insurance companies compensate providers for their real costs. This has been an ongoing problem.
Yeah.
But my own view is we are going to have to move to a national health care program guaranteeing health care to all people and providing making sure that our providers get the compensation that they deserve.
Yeah, very straightforward. Bill, thanks for
the comment.
Good to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894. Paul in Bradenton, Illinois is on line one. Hey, Paul, welcome to the program.
Yeah, it's Florida.
Oh, Florida. I'm sorry.
Yeah, Bernie?
Yeah.
Yeah, people call up and they talk about the Democrats or the Republicans. Well, the fact is that the Republicans have had both houses for 10 years, so there's no excuse for the Republicans.
No, well, they lost it for a little bit when Jeff had switched. But basically, you're right. They certainly have held the House since 94 when Gingrich came in. And I think, you know, that's a point that is not made often enough, Paul. You know, you can blame everybody, and that's fair enough. But ultimately, and there's no debate about this, the people who have the responsibility in Washington right now is the President of the United States, the Speaker of the House, the President pro tem of the Senate, and they are all Republicans. The Republicans control our federal government. If you like what's happening in America, keep them in. If you have problems with what's happening in America, I do, I think many other Americans do, throw them out. But you're right in saying responsibility today rests with the Republicans who control all three branches of government, period, end of story.
Yeah, and a story that needs to be repeated more and more and more often because so many of these guys...
A lot of people don't know that.
Yeah, they're running as
a lot of people don't know that. They don't know that when you control the House, every committee chairman is a Republican. You control the Senate, every committee chairperson is a Republican. And obviously the president is a Republican. So for better or for worse, and I'm sure some people think it's for better, but for better or for worse, we have one-party control in Washington. I think that one party has shown that it could care less about the needs of the middle class and working families, that it worries a whole lot about large corporations and the wealthy. If you're happy with that situation, vote Republican. If not, I think it's time for a change.
Yeah, and on top of that, they're running as if they were outsiders. You know, let's blame Congress
themselves. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And people don't get it. Good point, Paul. Thanks for the call, Scott in Santa Rosa, California. Tom in Grand Rapids. Hang on the line. We'll pick up your calls on the other side of this break. It's the Tom Harbin Radio Program, Brunch with Bernie, our Friday afternoon segment. Stay tuned. We'll be right back from the Celebration Cinema.
Do you want to find out what the invasion of Iraq was really about? Read the new illustrated book, We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. Once you've read We the People, you'll understand why conservatives are trying to bankrupt government and how perpetual war is used as a political strategy in the United States. You'll learn how our votes are in danger and what we must do about it. You'll discover why the Alien and Sedition Acts of 1798 matter today. Populist watchdog and national radio commentator Jim Hightower had this to say about We the People.
Not only does this book tell you what's really going on, but it even draws you a picture of it. Read, learn, and act.
We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. A compelling story of how a government by and for the people has been replaced by corporate domination. Fully illustrated by Neil Cohn, We the People issues a call to action in a most entertaining way. Available in bookstores everywhere.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive Magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman Program. That's The Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies. On September 17th, I'll be broadcasting live on WTKG AM 1230 in Grand Rapids at the Celebration Cinema, noon to 3 p.m. at the corner of Knapp and East Beltline. Drop by early at 11 a.m. in the Wave Room for a get-together, then listen to the show. At 4 p.m. after the show, I'll be at Schuller Bookstore on 28th Street for a book signing. For more information, call 616-776-5541. That's 616-776-5541.
Can you imagine a world in which all kids live healthy, safe, productive, and prosperous lives? Well, that world is within our grasp, and there's a way to reach it. It's called Economics. And to learn more, just pull up DennisWeaverNow.com and learn how to get a free report of our Economics educational program and how together we can build a world of prosperity without pollution. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com.
A long-term study of Yellowstone National Park shows that wildfires are good for fish and other aquatic life. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. One of the arguments against letting wildfires burn is that they destroy forested slopes and leave the land open to erosion. But a new book about the 1988 fires in Yellowstone National Park shows that even erosion sometimes has its place in nature. Linda Wallace is a wildfire expert at the University of Oklahoma and the editor of After the Fires, a collection of reports on Yellowstone's recovery from the 1988 event. She says she was surprised by one study's finding that erosion is vital to aquatic life in the park's rivers and streams.
The erosion processes in Yellowstone are very, very important. And one of the things that the geological history has shown us is that we have these massive amounts of erosion occurring off and on. It turns out that even for the aquatic systems, that these erosion processes are very, very critical because they set up new spawning beds in streams and creeks, and that actually helps fish populations in the years following a fire.
Wallace says the influx of soil and ash is initially tough on fish, killing many of them.
During an erosion event, the creeks and streams, of course, get extremely muddy and fishing is impossible. Fish will die with their gills clogged. Those fish that manage to survive, though, will find the next year wonderful spawning area, and then the populations will actually respond positively.
These periodic erosion events also deliver minerals and other vital nutrients into the streams, an essential process in a nutrient-poor landscape. Wallace says these findings add support for the view that wildfires are an important part of many ecosystems, even some that are underwater. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
It's coming through a hole in the air.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894. We're live from the Celebration Cinema, Knapp and Beltline. Thanks to Phil Tower, Steve Dirksen, and Matt, who volunteered to come in and engineer our program today. Thanks to Ramesh Schneider for engineering our program there in Atlanta. Congressman Bernie Sanders with us. Hey, Bernie. Yeah, did I say Atlanta? I'm sorry. It's been a long day. Okay, let's go to our next call. Scott, line two. Scott in Santa Rosa, California. Hey, Scott, what's up? Line two, Scott.
All right, can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Great. I think John Edwards was a great choice for a vice presidential candidate for Kerry, but one thing that's got me bothered is I haven't seen him do anything in the past month. I haven't seen him on the news. I haven't seen him do talk show circuit. I haven't seen him do anything. And I, quite frankly, I think it's a huge mistake to keep him tied to a tree if that's what Kerry's doing.
Actually, as far as I can tell, he's out every single day. Bernie, am I missing something?
He's out every day, but I think Scott makes a good point. And I think you're probably going to see a change in policy. I think, frankly, Edwards ran a brilliant campaign running for president. His theme of two Americas, the America where the middle class is shrinking, where poverty is increasing, versus the other America where the wealthiest people in this country have never had it so good, is precisely what the theme of this campaign should be about. And I agree with Scott. I think that Edwards should be out there making that issue very, very clear.
Yeah, well said, Scott. Thanks for the call. Tom in Grand Rapids is on line three. Hey, Tom, welcome to the program.
Good afternoon.
Hi.
Can you hear me?
Sure, you're live.
Okay. First, I'd like to say thank you to both you and to Phil Towers for bringing this great show to West Michigan. This is I've been here 15 years, and this is a very conservative area where it's a great breath of fresh air to have a nice liberal talk show finally on our air. And you guys have survived, I think, longer than anyone that I'm aware of has.
Well, thank you. And thanks to Phil. I agree with you. So your question.
Absolutely. Question is, I work in healthcare, and I know this is a big issue, and one of my questions, I'm on the side of the liberal side, but one of my questions is the responsibility side of the citizen. And as the healthcare costs keep shooting through the roof, and I think they will keep doing this, how are we going to, I saw there was something about Kerry's plan to incentivize people to have healthier lifestyles.
Okay, Bernie.
The problem, the smoking problem, and so on.
Absolutely
really,
right.
Really
you've got to make major strides forward in dealing with drugs, dealing with diet, dealing with exercise. Dealing with environmental issues as well. We could save this country hundreds of billions of dollars if we did that. And we've got to put more emphasis and funding into that as well.
Into those areas. It's got to be a broad-based thing. Bernie, Congressman Bernie Sanders, thanks so much for being with us again this week, Bernie.
Good to be with you, Tom.
I do appreciate it. It's the Tom Hartman. Thank you, Bernie. It's the Tom Hartman radio program. We're broadcasting live from the Celebration Cinema. I'll be doing a presentation on my latest book at Schuller's on 28th Street at 4 o'clock this afternoon in Grand Rapids. Drop by if you're in the area.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
It's time for This Billionaire Moment.
When it came time to bilk California out of billions in energy costs, Kenneth Lay said, "Send me." When George Bush's campaign needed hundreds of thousands of bundle dollars, Kenneth Lay said, "Send me." When Dick Cheney needed help crafting energy policy that was friendlier to corporations, Kenneth Lay said, "Send me." And when someone had to keep small Enron investors calm so the big guys could bail out before the stock collapsed, Kenneth Lay said, "Send me." He pioneered new ways to create profits, and now he has to wear an orange jumpsuit and languish in a cell without room service. We can only hope that there's a squash court at that minimum security prison. I'm Zena Fobe for This Billionaire Moment.
This Billionaire Moment is brought to you by BillionairesForBush.com.
Here come the billionaires!
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner. The U.S. Justice Department announced yesterday that German computer memory manufacturing giant Infineon Technologies AG has agreed to plead guilty to international price fixing. The company conspired with other dynamic random access memory manufacturers to cheat Dell, Compaq, Hewlett-Packard, and others. The company will be required to pay a $160 million fine, the third largest price fixing penalty in U.S. history.
United Food and Commercial Workers Union locals in California have begun shopping for allies in Colorado and Ohio. Contracts covering more than 60,000 supermarket employees in San Francisco, parts of Colorado, and Cincinnati all expired on September 11th. UFCW locals from those three areas have begun negotiations toward an alliance. According to representatives of the UFCW, the massive unification is an attempt to give support to one another if contract negotiations turn into a fight. The alliance comes nearly a year after the nation's longest ever grocery strike and lockout in Southern California.
Contrary to the current trend, J.P. Morgan announced this week that it will rehire 4,000 outsourced IT workers. Just 2 years ago, J.P. Morgan agreed to a $5 billion outsourcing deal with IBM, at the time one of the largest in the U.S. A company spokesperson said the employees are being rehired due to a recent merger with Bank One, which he said strengthened J.P. Morgan's technology infrastructure.
On Wednesday morning, after a night-long occupation of a Canadian paper plant that closed unexpectedly, disheartened workers returned to their homes. 400 workers were out of a job when the New Brunswick Pulp and Paper plant announced it was suddenly closing Tuesday. The plant, owned by Parsons and Whitmore of New York, said the closing was due to the high cost of wood and rising Canadian dollar. Union representatives at the mill are encouraging the workers to contact local officials who they blame for allowing the company to leave New Brunswick too easily.
Today's Dow Bob Report. Working women spend twice as much time as working men taking care of children and doing housework, according to a recent survey by the U.S. Labor Department. 78% of women and 85% of men hold jobs, but only 19% of men reported doing housework daily, compared to two-thirds of working women. Women also spent an hour and a half caring for a family member. The average man spent only 50 minutes. You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
No, not the yacht.
Darling, wake up. You're having a nightmare.
Oh, it was terrible. Oh. I dreamed we lost our billions, and we were middle class.
There, there.
We were both working, and we could barely pay our bills. The children had to go to public schools. Oh. We had something called an HMO.
Oh, you poor thing.
It seems so real. We couldn't even afford my Botox.
Oh, sweetheart, go back to sleep. I'll write another campaign check tomorrow.
President George W. Bush, keeping alive the American dream. For some of us.
Easily paid for by billionairesforbush.com.
Did you take full and proper notice of the political coming out of George W.'s twin daughters? Jenna and Barbara, the 22-year-old twins, have long been kept away from the political glare, but they're now adults who have just graduated from college, and both have been brought into the limelight by the Bush political campaign. Their first outing was for a photo spread and puff piece that ran in Vogue, the fashion magazine. Indeed, they looked splendiferous, beautifully made up and swathed in glamorous designer gowns, one by Oscar de la Renta and the other by Calvin Klein. No telling how many silkworms toiled to make this photo spread possible. But, tacky me, I couldn't help thinking as I viewed the photos, why aren't they in fatigues and Kevlar vests like other women and men their age? Jenna and Barbara announced that they would be joining their daddy's election campaign, but I had to ask myself, why aren't they joining their daddy's war? After all, he says that his war in Iraq is absolutely essential to our national security, and he insists that his policies over there are absolutely worth the troops who have been killed, worth the horrible mutilations of thousands of other soldiers, worth the horrific beheadings, worth the untold illnesses and poisonings being contracted by the men and women he has sent there, and worth the illegal conscription of tens of thousands of Americans forced to stay in this disastrous war beyond their legitimate tour of duty. So, if Daddy's war is absolutely worth the sacrifice of America's workaday families, why is it not worth the enlistment of his military-age family? This is Jim Hightower saying, maybe it's genetic. After all, George himself was a ferocious war hawk who used family connections to keep himself 8,000 miles from Vietnam. And now that he's president, he can start his own war that leaves his loved ones safely swathed in silk, while our families see our loved ones come home in shrouds.
My name is James, and I want to tell you how a friend of mine changed my life. After my wife passed away, I found myself spending more and more time alone. I kept up with the daily business of living, but didn't get out as much. Didn't see friends as much. That's when I met a new friend, Sassy. Let me tell you about her. First of all, she can perform miracles. She's only a year old, weighs only 9 pounds, but she can jump up 5 times her own height. But the most impressive miracle is what a difference she's made in my life. She's my cat. I named her Sassy because I had a cat named Sassy when I was a little boy. I shared everything with that cat. What I've realized is that it doesn't matter if you're 8 or 80. We all need friends. I found my best friend, Sassy, at the ASPCA.
This is Richard Thompson, member of the board of directors of the ASPCA, encouraging you to visit your local animal shelter and adopt a cat.
Covers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here, broadcasting live from WTKG. We're at the Celebration Cinema Nap and Beltline in Grand Rapids, Michigan at 4 o'clock this afternoon Eastern Time. I'll be giving a presentation on What Would Jefferson Do? And then signing books at the Schuller's Bookstore, 28th Street. And so if you're in the area, drop by. Two Sioux feds over anti-Bush t-shirt. This interesting story here. Remember, we reported on this sometime back when it first happened, the arrest. A couple arrested for wearing anti-Bush t-shirts to a July 4th presidential appearance have now filed a federal lawsuit. This was just a couple days ago, alleging their First Amendment rights were violated. It sure seems like it to me. I mean, doesn't this just, like, make sense? You get arrested for wearing a T-shirt that says, Kerry Edwards, arrested! Nicole and Jeff Rank. Well, actually, it wasn't just Kerry Edwards. It went a little farther than that. But well, you decide. Maybe you can tell me what you think of this. Nicole and Jeff Rank were removed from an event. The President of the United States comes to town, give a speech. They say, well, you know, we'd like to hear this speech. They had tickets. They were removed from the event at the West Virginia Capitol in handcuffs. After revealing T-shirts with President Bush's name crossed out in the front, Nicole Rank's shirt had the words, Love America, Hate Bush, on the back, and Jeff said, Regime change starts at home. And Jeff says, what is at stake here transcends politics. What's at stake is the right of all Americans, Democrats, Republicans, and Independents, all Americans, to peacefully voice their dissent to their government. You will recall the First Amendment says, not, you know, it's not just church and state. It's not just the press. It says the right of citizens to peaceably assemble to and petition their government for redress of grievances shall not be, Congress shall pass no law violating that right. This is a fundamental right. The American Civil Liberty Union has filed the lawsuit in federal court. And I have to say, Nicole and Jeff, I wish you well. Good luck. This administration is the most anti-First Amendment administration in my recollection, certainly. I mean, I wasn't around and conscious, at least, paying attention during the McCarthy Army hearings in the early 50s. I was just a wee little one. But that was overt and theater. And, yeah, it was pretty grim. You know, I have a few friends who are a bit older than me, one who's quite a bit older than me, who actually was blackballed in Hollywood during that time period. And so, you know, it was pretty tough stuff. But it's back. And it's back in, frankly, I think, a more insidious fashion. Because back in the 50s, you could show up at a presidential rally and dissent. You could hold a banner for the opposite party, at least for everything I understand. Here's another story, just in the lines of the best of the rest of the news. And then we'll get to a few phone calls here if you'd like. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number, if you'd like to call in. And if any of the folks here in Grand Rapids want to come on into the studio and be on the air, if you have thoughts, comments, arguments, questions, a topic that you'd like to discuss, you're welcome to drop by. We've got a good crowd of folks here at the Celebration Cinema at Nap and Beltline. This I think, goes right to the core of the issue of what is the difference between liberal and conservative morality, values. Values, morality have been made such a big issue in this campaign, as if the cons would have you think. The monopoly on values is held by the Republican Party or by conservatives. And the reality is that there are two different ways that you can focus on values, on morality. One is private morality and the other is public morality. And my suggestion, and I really think if you look at this, you'll find this is broadly true, that the conservative take on morality is, morality is what you do in your bedroom. Morality is what private people do. It's how you conduct your individual personal life. And to a large extent, I agree. There is a very real issue there of morality as being a function of how we behave. Okay, I'll go along with that. We may draw lines in different places, but I'll go along with that. However, I think frankly most liberals would as well. Most progressives, I don't think anybody disagrees that stealing is immoral. Or that, beating your children is immoral. Everybody agrees on these things. But where it gets fuzzy is, issues of, for example, private morality is a word. Private drug use, for example. Or should sex between consenting adults in private be legal or illegal? Or should there be certain types of sex that are legal and other types that are illegal? This is private morality. This is the conservative domain. The liberal domain of morality is more focused on public morality. It really tracks back to the only place, to the best of my knowledge, and I've only read the Bible four times, so maybe I've missed something, but as far as I can tell, the only place in the Bible where the disciples came to Jesus and they said, how do you get into heaven? And he laid it out. This is Matthew 25. He laid it out. He says, feed the hungry, give water to the thirsty, visit those in prison, give clothing to the naked, take in the homeless. That's the only way. That's the path. And so here now we have televangelist Paul Crouch, founder of the world's largest Christian broadcasting network. He's 70 years old, president of Trinity Broadcasting, based in Orange County. His Christian programming reaches millions of viewers around the world by satellite, cable, and broadcast stations. And he's got a guy, Enoch Lonnie Ford, claiming that they had a gay sexual relationship. Crouch has already paid him $425,000, and now he's threatening him big time because Lonnie wants $10 million to keep quiet. And it has now leaked out into the public. So this just highlights this. This just really highlights this issue. There is a difference between public and private morality. And at one time in the United States, we had a very solid sense of public morality. It's how Social Security came about. It's how Medicare came about. It's how the war on poverty came about. The concept of a public morality, the concept that we do have an obligation to each other, that a chain is only as strong as its weakest link. And in my opinion, the folks who totally ignore this do so at their peril. Speaking of strong and links and this sort of thing, Senator Majority Leader Bill Frist, Republican of Tennessee, said yesterday, our highest responsibility is to the safety and security of the American people. But this week in the Senate, in a series of votes on the 2005 spending bill for the Department of Homeland Security, conservatives showed their true colors, notes the Center for American Progress. While conservatives, including Frist, have eagerly spent more than $135 billion for the security of Iraq, they refuse to support modest increases in funding for vital homeland security needs in the United States. Now, keep in mind, $300 million is one-third of a billion. We're on our way to spending $200 billion in Iraq. So one-third of $1 billion, $300 million, roughly a third. The conservatives in Congress have voted down Bill Frist and his friends, who just said just said, our highest priority, safety and security of the American people, just voted down $300 million for port security, $149 million for firefighters, $70 million to track shipments of hazardous materials, $50 million for more federal air marshals, $70 million to secure chemical plants, and $350 million to improve security at ports of entry into the United States. Now, if all of that together, $30 million for port security, $145 million for firefighters, $70 million for hazardous materials, $50 million for air marshals, $70 million for chemical plants, $350 million to improve security at our ports of entry into the United States, if all that sounds like a lot of money, consider this. You add all that up, and you have less money than we spend in the country of Iraq in 2 days. And yet, tax cuts for billionaires is more important than protecting our ports, guarding our chemical plants, $146 million. That's 14% of a billion dollars. This is nothing in the grand scheme of things. That's about 4 hours of Iraq. For firefighters. Now we can't afford it, says Bill Frist. I can't afford it, says Tom DeLay. Denny Hastert, no, it's too much money. Can't do that. Amazing. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. But before we go to the calls here and before this break, we've got a guest. Diane is in the studio with us here in Grand Rapids at the Celebration Cinema at Nap and Beltline. Hey, Diane, welcome to the program.
Thank you. It's great to see you here in Grand Rapids.
Thank you, Diane. What do you want to talk about?
Well, I have a lot to talk about, but let's start by renaming the war in Iraq from the War on Terror to the War for Terror. Since we're helping the terrorists by making sure we recruit more of them, I think that what's happened with the Karl Rove spin machine is that they're getting us to use their terms.
Yeah.
And we can't do that. I've heard a lot of people talk about Kerry, and they're all using the terms that the Republican spin machine has put out.
Yeah.
Well, I don't really like him. He's not really a good candidate, you know, and all that stuff. The more I read about Kerry, the more I hear about him, I think he's a fabulous candidate. I really like him.
Yeah.
It's just that he... his speaking is, because he's intelligent and nuanced, it doesn't lend itself to sound bites. You really have to listen to what he says on health care and on the issues that he talks about.
Yeah, and I think to a large extent the national media has been so beaten up by the conservative spin machine that they're almost afraid to give good coverage for fear that they'll be called, you're liberal, it's the liberal media, that's what it is, we got to, and then there's like this collective shell shock. I mean, and they're all looking at Dan Rather right now going, is my career next? And you know, for better or for worse, a lot of these reporters for the networks, I mean, they're making good money, and if they lose their jobs because the Republicans go after them, they're toast. They're not going to have a career, you know, and their families, their kids, the whole thing. And you're absolutely right. Phrases like tax relief, you know, tax relief implies that you're being, you know, relieved of a burden. You know, taxes are the cost of admission to civil society. And it's not tax relief. It's tax deferral that we've got here. So I absolutely agree with you, Diane.
When I first happened on your station here in Grand Rapids, I thought I had slid into an alternate universe. It was like I was on sliders.
That's great. Well, but here we are. Yeah, welcome to the alternative universe. Diane, thanks for your comments. Stick around. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number. We're broadcasting live from WTKG in Grand Rapids, Michigan. We're at the Celebration Cinema, WTKG's studio at Nap and Beltline. Come on down, drop in, or at 4 o'clock, drop by Schuler's at 28th Street.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Billionaires for Bush.
Now, it's time for This Billionaire Moment.
When human rights groups discover that our third world sweatshops employ a lot of child labor, they're always horrified. These children should be in school, they stridently insist. But why would these kids be better off sitting at a desk learning about social studies than working on our assembly lines? Schools are supposed to prepare you for the future. In most of the places we do business, the only future these moppets have is on an assembly line. What better way for them to prepare than in our sweatshop apprentice program? The kids get paid a special introductory wage while they learn all the skills they'll need for the rest of their short, miserable lives. And those little hands can do some really intricate stitching, believe me. This has been Xenophobe for This Billionaire Moment.
This Billionaire Moment is brought to you by BillionairesForBush.com.
Here come the billionaires!
For more than 27 years, the progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. According to the Work Zone Safety Clearinghouse, work zone-related fatalities dropped substantially last year. In 2003, there were 1,028 work zone deaths nationwide as compared to 2002, when there was 1,186. Texas holds the record for most deaths over the last 2 years with a combined total of 358. Georgia is the most improved, going from 118 fatalities in 2002 and dropping to 24 in 2003.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive Magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman Program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
I get up every morning and ignore the global warming. Head out to the Oval Office, start my day.
And welcome back.
My donors all protected so I can be re-elected. Give them access just as long as they pay.
Oh, it's George's song.
To the corporate crooks who keep cooking up the books. We make sure we look the other way.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live from the Celebration Cinema, WTKG, Napa Beltline. Winn Schuler's used to be that restaurant. It probably still is. Anyway, Schuler's Bookstore on 28th Street. I remember that years ago. I used to actually, in the early 70s, I was a pilot. I'd fly from Lansing down to Marshall for that. Anyhow, we're talking Michigan trivia here. Those of you in the rest of the world... My apologies. Let's get back to the national. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Dave in Humboldt County is on line one. Hey, Dave, what's up?
Well, Brother Tom, a subject that's been concerning me for a long time, and you too, I know, that the only votes that should be counted are those votes that can be recounted if they're contested.
Amen, brother!
Yeah, well, the thought I'm having is that is it possible in the short time remaining... some smart lawyers, perhaps have John Edwards oversee it, draft injunctions in all the states that plan to use non-verifiable voting machines, making them illegal unless they can be recounted.
Yeah, you know what would be interesting, and I haven't, frankly, I wrote one of the very first articles about this whole voting machine scam thing that got the word out. They were published on Common Dreams and then Alternet, and then I did a piece for MoveOn.org that they mailed out to 1.4 million people. And so I think I've done a little bit to sensitize people on this issue. But frankly, there's one thing that I've been very curious about, and I haven't had the time to do the research to find out. And that is, I wonder, of the states, for example, like Georgia or Florida, where they're going to have no paper ballots, it's all going to be electronic voting machines. With no verifiable record. And we saw on Topic A with Tina Brown, Howard Dean sit down and in 90 seconds hack a Diebold machine and change the outcome of an election in a way that was 100% undetectable and could have been done from a remote location. So I'm curious, of the states where there are these unverifiable electronic and easily manipulated electronic voting machines, how many of those states are the red states? How many are blue states? How many are up for grab states? That would be fascinating
to see that. I'm just sure that since Hassard and DeLay are blocking Russ Holt's bill, it is obvious, that's empiricist evidence, that it is that side that intends to rig the election.
You have to wonder, and why do the Republicans not want there to be a voter verified paper trail?
It's
illogical because they have to realize, unless they're totally blinded by hubris, they have to realize that at some point in time they're not going to be in power. I mean, things come and go. There's an ebb and flow to things. Unless these guys really and truly believe that they can create one-party rule in the United States, which it sure looks like they're trying to do, and which they think they have right now, and to a large extent they do, by the way, unless they think they can hang on to one-party rule forever. And, I think there are Republican co-sponsors for Rush Holt's bill, and I think they're the ones who have figured out we don't want anybody being able to manipulate the vote. Nobody.
If they can rig the elections, they can hang on forever. That's their thinking. I had another quick thought for you, thinking as a devil's advocate, that dear lady that had been arrested and handcuffed for the T-shirt, you didn't realize it could have been a weapon. At any moment, she could have ripped the T-shirt off and shoved it down Cheney's throat or something. You know?
Yes.
You have to think like Republicans think.
Stretching the definitions there, Dave. Dave, thanks for the call. Good to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number, just a real quick story here. We've got to take a break. Christian Science Monitor reports that 3 years after 9/11, quote, the goal of compatible and adequate communications among the nation's first responders is nearly as remote as ever. Why? Because the National Association of Broadcasters is fighting an FCC rule that would have devoted a small portion of the broadcast spectrum to first responders like police and firemen so they can talk to each other on the same frequency. Isn't this strange? Here you've got corporate America fighting against the firemen and the police departments. Curiouser and curiouser. For more than 27 years, the Progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner. The U.S. Justice Department announced yesterday that German computer memory manufacturing giant Infineon Technologies AG has agreed to plead guilty to international price fixing. The company conspired with other dynamic random access memory manufacturers to cheat Dell, Compaq, Hewlett-Packard, and others. The company will be required to pay a $160 million fine, the third largest price fixing penalty in U.S. history.
United Food and Commercial Workers Union locals in California have begun shopping for allies in Colorado and Ohio. Contracts covering more than 60,000 supermarket employees in San Francisco, parts of Colorado, and Cincinnati all expired on September 11th. UFCW locals from those three areas have begun negotiations toward an alliance. According to representatives of the UFCW, the massive unification is an attempt to give support to one another if contract negotiations turn into a fight. The alliance comes nearly a year after the nation's longest ever grocery strike and lockout in Southern California.
Contrary to the current trend, J.P. Morgan announced this week that it will rehire 4,000 outsourced IT workers. Just 2 years ago, J.P. Morgan agreed to a $5 billion outsourcing deal with IBM, at the time one of the largest in the U.S. A company spokesperson said the employees are being rehired due to a recent merger with Bank One, which he said strengthened J.P. Morgan's technology infrastructure.
On Wednesday morning, after a night-long occupation of a Canadian paper plant that closed unexpectedly, disheartened workers returned to their homes. 400 workers were out of a job when the New Brunswick Pulp and Paper plant announced it was suddenly closing Tuesday. The plant, owned by Parsons & Whitmore of New York, said the closing was due to the high cost of wood and rising Canadian dollar. Union representatives at the mill are encouraging the workers to contact local officials who they blame for allowing the company to leave New Brunswick too easily.
Today's Dow Bob Report. Working women spend twice as much time as working men taking care of children and doing housework, according to a recent survey by the U.S. Labor Department. 78% of women and 85% of men hold jobs, but only 19% of men reported doing housework daily, compared to two-thirds of working women. Women also spent an hour and a half caring for a family member. The average man spent only 50 minutes. You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.com.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
I said I'd leave no child behind. I guess I changed my mind. Luckily, I bribed you with my tax cut con. The rich got richer, soon the surplus was gone.
And welcome back. $70 million. $70 million. The amount of money that we're spending in Iraq in what? Maybe 4 hours? 3 hours? $70 million. Denny Hastert and Tom DeLay say, sorry, $70 million, too much money, we can't afford this. Actually, it was Bill Frist. Here it was, Senate leadership, that's Bill Frist, killed yesterday an amendment to spend $70 million to allow real-time communication between state and local first responders. You know, you've got all these firefighters and police officers, particularly the firemen who died in 9/11 in the towers, in many of them because they couldn't communicate with each other. There was no coordination of communication. $70 million would make it happen. Nationwide. Bill Frist says, no. Bill Frist, who is worth easily much more than $70 million because of taking private, nonprofit hospitals, county hospitals, and once the laws were changed so that they could be run for profit, taking these hospitals and running them for profit and squeezing the blood out of them, out of us, out of you and me. Bill Frist, whose family business, they sold it, but whose family business was fined $800 million. An $800 million fine. And they paid it. They're still in business because $800 million is just a little bit to Bill Frist's family business. This guy says, no, $70 million, the amount of money we spend in a few hours in Iraq is too much money. Too much money to provide real-time communication between state and local first responders across the United States. Sorry, guys. We're gonna flog 9/11 from the Republican National Convention to the end of the earth. We're gonna flog 9/11 as a political issue, but we're not gonna pay for anything that might prevent another one from happening or that might help the first responders deal with it, God forbid, if it should happen again. It's a tragedy. It's an absolute tragedy. 1-866-889-8894 is our telephone number if you'd like to call in. We also have Diane in the studio with us here in Grand Rapids. If you'd like to drop by, we're at the Celebration Cinema, Knapp and Beltline, broadcasting live on WTKG in Grand Rapids. In an hour from now, hour and a half from now, we'll be doing a book signing, 4 o'clock at Schuller's on 28th Street. I'll also be doing a presentation there, about a half-hour speech on, whatever you want to call it, on my new book, What Would Jefferson Do? And so, you know, feel free to drop by, those of you in the Grand Rapids market. And our special thanks to Phil Tower and all the folks at WTKG who helped make this happen, make this possible for us to do this live remote is what they call these things in the radio business. Let's go to the telephone lines. Glenn in Tulsa, Oklahoma on line 2. Hey, Glenn, welcome to the program. What's up?
Tom, the thing that really gets my attention, and you talked about it, and then at the end of one caller, he talked about it, is the trend, is a bigger trend rather than the specifics of how there this arresting of people who are protesting, who have tickets, who have a right to be in there for disruptive trespassing. I mean, this woman's son died, and other protesters arrested, but only at Republican rallies, not at Democrat rallies where they can wear any kind of T-shirt they want. But the police are working with them, and how quickly the conversation changed from Are the information in these memos truthful to Dan Rather is a bad person, ignoring the fact that the woman, they should have just interviewed the woman and she should have just said, yeah, these were his thoughts rather than
the woman being
the papers,
being the secretary, Jerry, what's his name, Killian's secretary.
Right, but the insidious part of all this is that these sort of trends towards a more authoritarian police state all seem to be happening with the Republicans, not the Democrats.
Yeah.
I mean, that's really scary to me that you have to fear wearing what you say or wearing a T-shirt that expresses an opinion or a bumper. What are they going to do, start arresting us for having pro-Bush bumper stickers?
Well,
fired for that.
You know, Glenn, it's the preemptive arresting of potential protesters is just like the preemptive attack of a country that might have, and turns out it didn't, weapons of mass destruction that might, and it turns out it didn't, represent a threat to the United States. This is just anti-American principles. This is the antithesis of the America that I grew up in. And it's been, our country has been hijacked by right-wing cranks of the extreme order. And I know a lot of principled conservatives, a lot of people who, like I did back in 1960, worked aggressively to get Barry Goldwater into office. And a lot of principled Democrats who have worked over the years to get Democrats. I've never been, frankly, after I left the Republicans in the 60s, I've not joined any political party since then. But, a lot of principled Democrats, right across the spectrum, people are looking at this administration and saying, these people are not true to Republican principles. They are spending more money than any administration in history. They're running up massive debts. They're calling it tax relief when, in fact, it's a tax deferral. It's a tax on our children and our grandchildren. They're putting this country hugely in debt. They're running up a huge trade deficit, which means that other countries have to come in and buy up our industries, buy up our properties, buy up our land, buy up our natural resources, and it's turning us into a banana republic. It's just wrong. And the preemptive stopping of people pointing that out is part of the program. Glenn, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. You point good things out. You truly do. 1-866-889-8894 telephone number. Chris in New Mexico is on the line. Hey, Chris, what's up?
Hey, Tom.
Yeah.
Can you hear me? Thank you.
I can.
Of course, the real danger posed by the woman in that T-shirt at the Bush rally was she might have taken it off, exposed a breast, and John Ashcroft would have popped an embolism.
Like he covered up the statue in the Justice Department that's been sitting there since the founders. You know, it's,
Anyway, something that hasn't gotten a lot of play lately. I was told, or I heard on the news over and over again, that the Pentagon has released all the information on Bush's National Guard service.
Well, we've been told that over and over again, but then they just released some more of it last week.
Yeah, and a federal judge on Wednesday ordered the Pentagon to release more files under a Freedom of Information Act lawsuit filed by the AP.
Yeah. You know, Chris,
why isn't this being played up?
Chris, I think the fact that Bush lied to us again is just not a news story anymore.
Well, maybe I'll get $1,000 out of it.
Yeah, if we go see the guy on the street corner there in New Mexico.
Take care, man.
Chris, thanks for the call. Good to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894 is our telephone number, national toll-free phone number. We're broadcasting live here from Grand Rapids, Michigan. John in Santa Fe is on the line. Hey, John, what's up?
Yeah, hi. I just wanted to mention a bumper sticker slogan I saw that kind of inspired me. Bushites are scary. Let's vote for Kerry.
Oh, that's cute. That's better than four more wars. I like that.
It's one more, but I think it zeroes in.
I saw one a couple days ago.
Concern.
Yeah, I saw one a couple days ago. It said, bring back Monica Lewinsky. I would much rather have a Monica Lewinsky scandal than 1,000 dead soldiers in Iraq, frankly.
What do you think about the fact that they are so scary is due to the fact that they are really representing the old that is being threatened in a major way, the old paradigm, the old business as usual kind of thing. And so there's a lot of unconscious panic and fear there because there's an instinct that we have to change and they don't want to change.
Well, wait a second. Who's the they that you're talking about? And what's the
Bushites,
old that you're talking about?
The old order, the Republicans, the neocons. They're trying to preserve something that is becoming.
No, they're not. They're not. This is the reason why there are so many principled conservatives, genuine, honest to God, principled conservatives and Republicans who are a lot of them. There's a movement of them who are saying we're not going to vote for George W. Bush. These guys are not conservatives, and they're not pro business. They're pro multinational corporations. There's 1,000 or so major multinational corporations that are benefiting from the policies of this administration, but small businesses all across America are being wiped out. The main street of every city looks the same as every other city. That means that there isn't local competition. Competition is being destroyed. And anybody who believes in conservative or liberal principle, any kind of rational economic principles, looks around and says, you know, there's something really wrong with this trickle-down, trickle-on economic theory, what George Herbert Walker Bush called voodoo economics, and tried in a small way to reverse, which some say cost him the election, of Ronald Reagan. Although Reagan himself tried to reverse it. You know, Reagan had a huge tax cut, and then he had 6 consecutive years of tax increases. This is
well,
very
as you
often
said once, that they've sort of been trying to undo the New Deal.
Yeah, this is
third regime.
That's right.
By the old order. It's like it is going nowhere because it does not represent democratic principles.
Yeah, well, the old
what's happening is a revival of that at the grassroots level.
Yeah, then the old okay, to agree with you to an extent, I'd say if you want to define the old order as what in the 1890s were the railroads and Carnegie and Rockefeller, basically trusts, monopolies,
yeah, elitism.
Yeah, which are now multinational rather than just national. I mean, at least back then, they were all Americans, and it was, you know, to the extent that they were being successful, you could even argue that they were helping American business. Now you can't argue that. It's a disemboweling.
I mean, it's the power-based, fear-based paradigm that is just no longer going to work because if you try to make it multinational, it's going to dehumanize the planet.
Yep, absolutely.
So that is why it's not being supported.
It's not. It's not just that it's going to, John. It is.
It is why.
That is dehumanizing the planet. I mean,
yes,
this
exactly.
Is, this
right.
is what happened.
And that is so anti. Progress. You know, it's just anti-growth. It's just like nature is trying to rebalance itself by pointing out to us, we better wake up.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Well said, John. Thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Good to hear from you. You're spot on. 1-866-889-8894. Jason in Grand Rapids, Michigan on the line. Hey, Jason, welcome to the program.
How you doing today?
I'm great, but I'll get better. How about you?
Oh, I'm doing all right.
Okay, what's up?
I have a question for you. I have decided that I am not going to vote in this year's election because I voted in 2000 to put George Bush in the office, and I've been thoroughly disgusted with it ever since.
You need to do penance. Jason, wouldn't it be easier just to take your shirt off and walk down the street whipping yourself and bloody?
Maybe. But I've not been impressed by anything I've heard about John Kerry, and I'm wondering what you can tell me about him that would change my mind.
Well, what are the issues that you care about, Jason?
Well, I would say the environment is one and the economy is another.
Okay, well, with regard to the environment, clearly George Bush's commitment and all of his actions, and in fact, about a year ago, we had Tom Tancredo, the congressman from Colorado, the Republican congressman from Colorado, on this program, and we started a contest. And I said, Congressman Tancredo, can you name one piece of legislation that originated with the Bush administration or with Republicans in Congress that George Bush has signed into law that has been primarily to the benefit of we the people or the commons rather than to the benefit of a specific corporate interest group, and he was unable to name it. And nobody to this date has won that contest. I'm offering a free copy of any of my books. Pick the book that I've written, and you know, you can win the contest. The bottom line is that George Bush is purely in the pocket of the large corporations. Period. And John Kerry has a long history of supporting environmental standards, of improving the environment. So number one, you know, if you care about, and it's not just, gee, isn't it nice to have a pretty environment? It's like, do you want to die of cancer? I mean, that's really what it boils down to. Bush has cut the mercury, increased the amount of mercury in our air, increased the amount of arsenic in our water, and on and on and on it goes. I mean, they just took tens of millions of acres and tens of thousands of miles of streams and rivers out of protection under EPA, under water protections, just last week. So, you know, for nothing else, I would pick John Kerry for that. And again, I'm not a Democrat, and if John Kerry becomes president, you're going to hear me complaining every day about the things that, you know, but the areas of disagreement I have. But he is so much better than this guy, than George W. Bush. With regard to the economy, John Kerry at least gets it that this is a train wreck, that Bush has given us a train wreck. He's trying to do the same thing Ronald Reagan did, which is, if you, Jason, were to give me a credit card with $1 million balance on it that I knew that I never had to pay, that my children were going to pay or that you were going to pay, I could, and then I could just spend it however I wanted. I could make you think that life was so good, you know, say we were friends, and I say, hey, let's go to Paris, let's have a vacation. Hey, we'll spend $1 million, and everybody would go, wow, they're really doing well. And it sure would look like we were doing well. That's what Reagan did. He was the first president to throw us into debt more than $1 trillion, and that's what George W. Bush is doing right now. They're spending on a credit card to try and make it look like there's good times. That's not how you create any kind of stability or strength in a nation. That's how you destroy the economy of a nation. And John Kerry has a long Senate history of voting in favor of balanced budgets and rational economic policy. Straightforward.
Well, I appreciate that. What would you say that is the one monumental thing he's done as a senator for the United States?
Frankly, I think that his investigations into BCCI, which is very understated, I'm surprised there hasn't gotten more coverage of it, bringing down this international crime syndicate that was funding terrorists and terrorism, particularly Osama bin Laden and many others in Al-Qaeda, and also the Bush family, BCCI-connected people that helped George W. Bush with Harkin Energy. I think his bringing down BCCI was one of the big things. This long investigation he did in Congress that brought that thing down. He has a long history of taking on really significant issues in a very modest way and just not letting go, just hanging on, you know, just hanging on to the pant leg of that issue until he gets it. And he angered a lot of people in his own party, which is one of the reasons why I think the Democrats don't talk about it so much, because a lot of Democrats took heat when BCCI went down too. But he cleaned up a major nest of terrorist funding in the United States and around the world, and it was a huge accomplishment that he did over the objections of his own party and over the violent objections of the Republicans, and which earned him the eternal hatred of the Bush family because he outed several of them who were involved in this thing. I'd say that's his number one accomplishment.
Well, you've given me plenty of good material to do some homework on, and I'll head over. Thanks for your time.
Check out his website, johnkerry.com, I believe it is. Jason, thanks for the call. Good to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number. We're broadcasting live from the Celebration Cinema. After this, we'll be down at Schuller's on 28th Street for a book signing. Right after this break, we'll be back with Diane from Grand Rapids, who has a few closing comments for us. One of the people here in our guest audience. Stick around. We'll be right back.
This is Vivilnik Raskin. I'm the president and founder of the Organic Wine Company. What happened when you, Thomas, gave us a plug? The phone started ringing.
the first person said, whatever it is that you're selling, I want to buy it. And for the next few hours, the phone rang nonstop. The people who listen to your program are what they call in the business my target audience, people who are conscious and responsible and try to do the right thing and try to think for themselves. I would encourage anyone to advertise on the Thomas Hartmann Show, absolutely, without question, whether that be on the national level or the local level, and you will absolutely get results. The way you can learn more about our imported organically grown wines from France is by calling us. The phone number is 1-888-ECO-WINE, or you can visit our site at www.ecowine.com.
How can contemporary America possibly compare with 1933 Germany? Find out in Tom Hartmann's brand new fully illustrated book, We the People, A Call to Take Back America. Through Tom's concise political analysis and Neil Cohn's vibrant illustrations, you'll observe an unsettling, if not shocking, perspective of America. You'll also hear what the founders of this country did to control corporate power. You'll be invited to consider how the American political system can be made more democratic, as well as comprehend the project for the new American century's vision for America. Here's what syndicated cartoonist Ted Rawl said after reading We the People.
An ambitious effort to explain everything that's wrong in America, how things got this way, and what should be done about it. We the People is the product of a brilliant and principled thinker.
We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartmann, available in bookstores everywhere.
Hi, this is Tom Hartmann. It's been said that if you scratch the surface of any issue of social or economic injustice, you'll find the issue of corporate power and corporate personhood. Join me for the facts on September 24th. I'll be speaking in Portland, Oregon at the Unitarian Church on Main Street at 7 p.m. For more information, call Marcia at 503-665-3957. That's 503-665-3957.
Can you imagine a world in which all kids live healthy, safe, productive, and prosperous lives? Well, that world is within our grasp, and there's a way to reach it. It's called Econonomics. And to learn more, just pull up DennisWeaverNow.com and learn how to get a free report of our Econonomics educational program and how together we can build a world of prosperity without pollution. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com.
A group hopes to persuade the federal government to drain a huge reservoir in Utah. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. When the Glen Canyon Dam was completed in 1966, it created Lake Powell, a vast reservoir stretching 186 miles from the dam in northern Arizona up through southeastern Utah. The project was controversial from the start because it submerged the scenic Glen Canyon, and it's still generating controversy today. A group of activists at the Glen Canyon Institute want to breach the dam, drain the reservoir, and let the Colorado River run free. Chip Ward writes about the effort in his new book, Hope's Horizon. He says the proposal offered in 1996 was first seen as outrageous.
Well, as it turns out, that proposal to drain Lake Powell makes an awful lot of sense. For one thing, Lake Powell traps huge amounts of sediment that have radically transformed the ecosystem downstream in the Grand Canyon. The reservoir drowned at one of the most beautiful canyon systems in the country, probably more beautiful than any national park that we have set aside. And even as a means of storing water, the lake, when it reached its fullest level, was seeing more evaporation off the surface area than water that was coming in.
Lake Powell loses 22 billion cubic feet of water to evaporation each year. Ward says that's become a critical issue.
Of course, at this point, because of this prolonged drought that we're experiencing in the West, Lake Powell has started to drain itself. It's actually down below half of its capacity at this point, and canyons that we have not seen for 20 years are suddenly reemerging from the lake and are accessible again.
The Glen Canyon proposal faces enormous resistance from Utah politicians as well as marina owners and other economic interests around Lake Powell. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
It's coming through a hole in the air from those gnats in Tiananmen Square. It's coming from the field that this ain't exactly.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live from WTKG Celebration Cinema at in Grand Rapids, Michigan. There are 112 hazardous material facilities where the release of chemicals could threaten more than 1 million people each. 112 places, each one of them, where if there was a terrorist act of sabotage, over a million people could be harmed or killed. Nevertheless, 3 years after 9/11, security at these plants, this from Senator Charles Schumer, he issued a report card in the nation's Homeland Security Department. Security at these plants remains lax, and no federal security standards govern these facilities. No federal security standards! Oh, yes, we're keeping America safe, say Bush and Cheney. No federal security standard. Why? Because the industry doesn't want it. It might be expensive. Other areas of high concern, train and subway security, the administration gets a D, truck security, a D, port security, a D+. And on it goes. Diane's with us here, a resident of Grand Rapids here at the Celebration Cinema. And Diane, why, you know, our caller just a few minutes ago, Jason, in Grand Rapids actually, asked, why should I vote for John Kerry? Why would you vote for John Kerry?
Well, first of all, Bush has been a disaster for this country completely. He's gutted all environmental standards. He's, you know, just messed over with our veterans. He's any area you look at that actually has public good, like your running contest, he has not done well by any area that's a transfer of wealth from the
from
state,
we the people,
yeah, from us to a selected few. He's done fabulously, you know. Yeah. And if you have the fantasy that you're going to be one of the selected few any day now, then you're going to buy into George Bush's.
But see, even if I had the fantasy that I was going to be one of the selected few, I think I'd like to live in a society where I don't have homeless people out in front of my house begging.
Yeah, but
I mean,
you know,
just very selfish. I mean, what's wrong with being rich and living in an egalitarian society, a middle class? Yeah, we still have about 20 seconds here. You can continue.
What, okay. Well, Diane? I think it's the illiteracy of the people that they are not seeing through these sound bites and looking at the nuanced, intelligent words that are coming out of John Kerry and you.
I. Well said. Thank you. And thanks for the plug, Diane. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Thanks to Louise for producing our show. Thanks for Phil Tower and Steve Dirksen and Matt and all the folks at WTKG for helping make this thing possible, this live remote from the Celebration Cinema here at Knapp and Beltline. Show up at Schuller's at 28th Street for the book signing. We'll see you then. Thanks to Rama, particularly back in Vermont, for engineering the program, and Ira for screening our phone call. See you Monday.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Visit iowapeace.com for books on justice and peace. The Last Liberal Outlaw is Mike Palasek's new novel. Chuck Gregory with BlueEar.com had this to say. Palasek is at his best when writing about small-town America. It's a place he clearly loves, even as he pokes fun at its quirks and reveals the sickness that lies just below the surface. It's a place he knows, and he shares his knowledge in delightfully original ways, even as he cries out for change. We haven't had a writer like Palasek.